Traveling the Vortex.
Just the two of us. We can make it if we try. Just the two of us.
Just the two of us.
Just the two of us. Building castles in the sky. Just the two of us. You and I.
We've joined the Doctor as he travels the Vortex and landed at episode number 86. And it's just the two of us. I'm Sean.
And I'm Glenn.
And Keith is on holiday. This just in, dead. No, not Keith. That would be bad. I'm going to start over. That joke went awry quickly. Just for the record, I did get confirmation from Keith. We are checked into our hotel. That came in like 10 minutes ago.
Oh, okay, good.
Safe and sound.
Was that a Twitter one or was that the...
It was I got a text at... It was right before you showed up. We just got checked in at 10:04 p.m. So they are safe and sound in... Where were they heading first?
Well, I don't know. Louisiana,
Jackson,
right?
Mississippi.
Oh, they were staying in Jackson tonight?
Staying in Jackson and before...
Because they were in Canton, Mississippi at about 9:15.
Okay, so they are safe tonight. I apologize for the off-color remark.
They are okay.
And apparently we have a YouTube channel. You'd be watching my screw-ups live, or as close as we can make them.
Sean, what'd you do this week?
What didn't I do this week?
We didn't really do anything this week.
I saw Men in Black 3 today.
I saw you tweet that out.
Awesome.
Better than the second
one. Oh, so good. It was thoroughly... It might... I hate to say this. Might be my favorite one.
Whoa. Better than the first one?
Out of the batch. I like the first one. I like Men in Black very much. But Men in Black has a tendency to, in many ways, kind of be a paint-by-numbers Hollywood movie. In that, okay.
Well, first of all, it's a blockbuster summer movie.
We're going to get
second. It's Will Smith.
We're going to get a couple
third.
Big stars.
Yeah.
You know, we're gonna. You can
and
just,
Tommy Lee Jones, who was at that time starring in just about everything.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. you can see the thought process that went into it, and to really maximize our blockbuster business, Men in Black clocks in at 90 minutes.
Oh wow!
Perfectly.
Wow.
And that way they can get the maximum number of shows in there. So in a lot of ways, I kind of look at that and go, you could have done a little bit more. You could have given me a little bit more of that edgy comic book that it's based on, you know. But I still enjoy it. I still think it's wonderful. I did not like Men in Black 2.
Yeah, I didn't hate Men in Black 2.
I didn't hate it, but
I wasn't a huge fan. I thought it was a letdown following the first film.
The one problem that I would have with saying Men in Black 3 is my favorite is that, well, because of the nature of the plot, which I don't know if you're aware.
Of three. I don't know much about it.
I won't spoil anything, but there's an alien with a personal vendetta against Kay, Tommy Lee Jones, uh-huh. who does go back in time and manages to eliminate said problem. So then everything changes, mm-hmm. and he's not there. So Will Smith, Agent J, has to go back in time to solve said problem. And it's set in 69, so of course you get the obligatory... Hey, look, it's the 60s. Flower power and love children and all that kind of stuff going
right.
on. But young Jay is played by Josh Brolin.
Mm-hmm.
So the one problem with this movie is that Tommy Lee Jones really isn't in it
Not very much. Yeah.
You know. But Josh Brolin nails
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I've
he
seen.
He is so good.
Everything I've seen in the previews, I just my jaw drops to the floor when I hear it.
And that's just it. I mean, watching him talk, the way he moves, the way his face doesn't.
Yeah.
he is Tommy Lee Jones. And I've always liked Josh Brolin. Mm-hmm. I've always liked Josh Brolin. We went through just kind of a spell where we wound up seeing, like, I don't know, five movies that he was in that just kind of all came out, bam, 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 bam. I mean, we saw him in Milk, and we saw him in No Country for Old Men, and we saw him in this and that, a true Tough Grit. And it was just, this is the kid from Goonies? The older brother,
yeah.
Brand?
Yeah.
Really? And he is an amazing actor.
Mm-hmm. He really is. And I think he's very underscored, too.
Yeah, I think so.
I think he gets overlooked a lot of times as for his talent.
Right now, as far as pure acting ability, I'm going to put him up there with Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who's somebody else that I really, really like. Now, Gordon-Levitt, at least, is kind of getting noticed.
He's
for
getting
these
there,
things,
though. I don't think he's that phenomenal
Brolin's not,
an actor.
Not to that
yeah.
level of...
I don't think Joseph Gordon-Levitt is a phenomenal actor, though.
You know,
I think he's getting there.
He's
polishing his chops. The best thing I've seen him in so far was The Dark Knight Rises. So, Anyway.
50-50 win. 500 Days of Summer.
I bought Hunger Games, but I haven't watched it.
So. Really?
I mean, I saw it in theater.
You saw it in the theater.
Years ago. Or
years ago.
Months ago.
March.
Yeah.
Release date was in March.
Yeah, months ago.
Months ago.
Bought it today and hadn't popped it in yet.
I kind of, honestly, I was kind of waiting for Steelbook. I really was hoping to get one of those nice black metallic with the flaming emblem. And I thought, that's going to be cool. And nobody did a Steelbook release
you
on it
and
here.
Your Steelbooks.
And I was like, man. So I haven't picked it up yet.
I'll tell you what. I would stop giving you a hard time about your Steelbooks if you would display them face out instead of spine out, because you can't tell any difference on them when they're spine out.
I don't
out.
Have enough shelf space.
I'm sorry.
If you're going to talk about this, you should put this on YouTube and go,
gonna,
wow.
If you're going to wow me with your Steelbooks or make me impressed with your Steelbooks, show me the artwork when it's on your when it's on your thing here. Because you know, all this is doing, though. All right, here's Sean's DVD collection. If you want to see this, you have to go on the internet because you can't see it through podcast, but this is it.
Through the magic of television, and we're bringing you this image live from the surface of Mars.
Address on here
yeah,
attached
you can come rob
so
me, please.
So that you can come steal him of all of these DVDs. So. Now, these bookshelves are custom made.
Yes.
Of course, there's about a 20th of them missing because Keith had his in here at one time, but. Not even a 20th, probably like a 30th, because I mean, really, this is all mine. It's insane. But there we go. Now,
and the laser discs are on here.
Oh yeah,
don't forget the laser discs.
Yeah, well, that's not all that impressive. It's impressive that he still has the laser disc. All right, we're signing off the YouTube channel now. All right, so yeah. So if you're gonna impress me with the Steelbooks, because I'll be the first to admit they look good, but. If I'm spending spend a lot more for the Steelbooks. But if you're spending a little bit more for the Steelbooks, I mean, there needs to be more of a reason for them than to be in a tin. That you need to be face out showing me what they look like.
Well,
maybe you need another shelf or something somewhere that just has the Steelbooks.
Oh, yeah, I could totally justify that. I just build another shelf in my apartment. Actually, the Steelbook pricing, they're about the same price. They don't charge more for a Steelbook. It's the same.
Are you sure?
I'm sure.
No.
It's the problem with them is that they are exclusive to certain places. Like FYE might have an exclusive on the Steelbook, where
because they're
Star Trek.
They're absorbing the cost
right.
because they want a gimmick of get you into
right.
their store to buy it. But here's the point: if you go to FYE, you're going to end up spending $5 more on a DVD anyway.
They're going to run more expensive.
Yeah, exactly.
But like, I mean, Best Buy had, I think, a deal with Warner Brothers because they had a ton of stuff out there and they were selling these. Blu-rays for $9.99,
yeah,
in Steelbook,
and it was that's like, impressive.
Wow,
that's impressive.
But yeah.
I don't like them because I think they get all dinged up and bent, and but they look nice. Don't get
you're
me wrong.
Talking,
but
to
I still think you need to display them.
You're talking
I think you
to
need
the guy when
say, here's your Steelbook.
Who was it? Live Entertainment at the time owned the rights to it. They brought out the two big special collector's editions on DVD for Basic Instinct, and it was the ice case. It looked like a big block of ice with the DVD inside, and then it had the ice pick pin that wrote in red ink, and the Total Recall case that was the round tin
recall
that looked like Mars.
Recall case was cool, I thought.
And
a lot of people didn't like it. I thought it was awesome.
One of those people that didn't like this.
Oh,
because one
it.
Of the things that I was really happy about with DVDs was the uniformity.
Yeah, well,
I wanted
they go on
the...
They go on a shelf very nicely.
I want this look.
Yeah.
As I point to the Doctor Who's.
Right.
I want that. I don't want to see these clamshells over here.
You don't
that doesn't
see,
look right.
You don't want to see Grease in its leather-bound
yeah,
bag.
Yeah, which I took
and
off.
You don't want to see Office Space in its... blocky box over here, and you don't want to see. What was the other one? You got another one. Oh, your Ghostbusters, although it fits on the shelf nice, but you're
like, just don't
really you know,
this round tin thing. How am I supposed to deal with that? But so yeah, I was there complaining about that, but then I really like the Steelbook, so what do I know?
Yeah,
I just think they're cool. Anyway, I thought a Hunger Games one would be really cool,
but what'd you buy today? You bought Jaws on Blu-ray.
I did. So. I bought Jaws, the new anniversary edition on Blu-ray. Which has the documentary, The Shark Is Still Working. And I was so excited about this documentary because I heard about it when I was still in school last semester. And I read up on it, and it was a labor of love. It was these guys, and they're just huge Jaws fans, and they started going, we want to put something together to talk about the impact of Jaws on our lives. Surely there are other people out there that have had that impact. And there are. And there's a ton of them. And they started talking to people and somehow got in with Roy Scheider before he had passed. And so they were talking about, you know, various things. And he's like, well, who do you want to talk to? And I said, well, anybody we can. He says, okay. And he gets on the phone and starts calling people up. And he got them access. Spielberg.
Oh, wow.
Who has said repeatedly, I'm done talking about Jaws. Everybody knows the problems. Everybody knows this. Everybody's that. And they're just like, okay, here's the deal. We don't want you to tell the story about the shark not working. We want you to tell the story about how Jaws impacted your career. And Spielberg was like, oh, okay, I'll tell
well,
that
I can
story.
Do that.
So it's this whole new range of material on, you know, and it's interviews with people like Eli Roth and Kevin Smith and Bryan Singer and how all these people, and, you know, people saying, Jaws is my favorite movie of all time. I watch it once a year. I carry a copy of The Jaws Log by Richard Gottlieb with me at all times. That's my movie-making Bible. And how these people relate to this film. Because I'm sorry, in my mind, Jaws is on my top five of all time. Jaws is nearly a perfect movie. I mean, it is that good. I love the way the thing is shot. I love the way it's presented. There's nothing bad about Jaws, period. And I just love it. So I was real excited. The sad thing was this documentary, because it was a labor of love, it was not licensed to anybody. It wasn't going to be. It was just kind of like these guys just did it. And then they kind of sat there and went, well, now what?
What do we do with it?
And so I heard about this thing that they were trying to drum up support to see if they could get a film festival to show it or something. And I'm like, this sucks. This is going to be the greatest Jaws documentary ever made.
Never be seen.
And it will never be seen. And then Universal apparently liked it so much. They were like, yeah, we're going to put that on Blu-ray.
Good.
So
hopefully they got a hefty fee, even though that's probably not what they're doing.
I'm sure they got paid. They talked about the narrator. They apparently were bouncing some ideas off of Roy Scheider about who should narrate it, and he said, well, what about me? And then they kind of went, well, yeah, if you want to do it. So it's narrated by Roy Scheider. It's the last thing he did before he died.
Well, that's nice. So, and that's especially nice then that Universal picked it up.
And it's got a lot of, it was almost sad. I've only watched the first segment or so, but it's really kind of sad because I didn't realize how many people have now. You know, we've lost Zanuck and Brown. We've lost Scheider. All these people. Robert Shaw's gone. I mean, so a lot of them, their last involvement in the Jaws universe was this. My absolute favorite piece. Do you remember the trailer? What was his name? Percy. And it was the image and the seaweed and all the stuff, and the music's kind of in there.
Yes,
and
yes.
Then he would come in.
I know what you're talking about.
There is a creature alive today that has survived millions of years of evolution. A perfect eating machine. It is as if God created the devil and gave him Jaws. They interviewed that guy.
Oh, wow.
And it was like, you got... And then, of course, Kevin Smith tells a fantastic story about how, you know, listening to his dulcet tones, and he describes him, he says, Percy is the weed... it's the gateway drug that gets people into the crack of the Jaws universe. You had to go through him. And it's funny because I had never seen any of those trailers until I bought the Laserdisc edition.
Yeah.
And then I was hooked on it. I was like, this is the greatest way to advertise a movie ever. Just that.
Right.
And so I was really, really, really stoked about that. That was my purchase for the week.
Good.
That had me excited.
Good. Well, I'm excited.
Far better than the Hunger Games.
I would have bought it, but I looked at Hunger Games and I thought, well, I've got to get Hunger Games for my wife. She's a big Hunger Games fan, so I'll pick that up, score some points.
Not that that's a bad movie.
And I probably would have bought Jaws 2 as well. Not 2, but as well.
I own Jaws 2.
Well, yeah. But I had to pick up Day of the Daleks this week as well. And that was quite a big purchase.
Now, I kind of foisted that one on you, didn't I?
No, not Biggie. But it's for a good cause, and we'll be reviewing that. Sometimes it's on indefinite hold right now.
Nice segue.
Yeah,
shall we talk about that?
Yeah, let's talk about that. Nothing else going on this week, though, right? I mean, we didn't do anything else. So
no. There's some pictures floating around on Facebook of I don't know, a party or something.
Some
I don't remember
thing
much
going on last night. Which that party was the result of a full refrigerator for you. Of which I am. Oh, look.
Oh, you're empty.
I'm ready for another one. So why don't you talk about that while I go refill?
Okay. So, there was an event. We've been talking about it a little bit, but not much.
No.
And as the best man for this event, I had certain duties that I still think I have things to do. I don't know. I'm kind of feeling like
it's a day after. It's 24 hours later, and you still think
the checklist is not quite done yet. I'm going, did I forget somebody's bow tie to get returned? I actually showed up at Men's Warehouse to return tuxedos 30 minutes after they closed.
No way.
Because I was dealing with my refrigerator.
Oh no.
I mean, they're in. They took. They're in, and they took them. But so yeah, Sarah's dad asked. He says, "Well, can you come help me with the keg?" And I'm like, "Well, what do you need help with?" He goes, "Well, emptying it." I'm like, "Well, I don't drink, so what do you need?" And he says, "Well, I don't either." He says, it's still half full. We've got to get rid of this." So it's like, "Okay, well, bring a pitcher or a thermos or a couple." Okay, so we go and we raid Mel's house, and she's got these big, gigantic gallon tea jugs, you know, pitchers, right. And we bring them over there, and we start filling this thing up, and we fill pitcher after pitcher after pitcher, and then I run out of pitchers. And so, you know how you have the cooler on wheels that you would pack with ice and Cokes to go to the ball game? Yeah, I filled that full of beer.
No ice, no cans.
No cans.
Beer.
Just beer. Just liquid beer rolling around, sloshing on the inside of this cooler. And we filled it. Now, this is not a small cooler. This is one of those big ones with the handle on wheels.
Now, after all of this, seeing how much you got and how much we drank last night, would you have thought that much was in a keg?
Never.
Never. It's so deceiving. Anyway.
Never.
Continue.
So then I started making phone calls. "Hey, remember me? We hung out in high school together." You want some beer? And so I did. I called our friend Phil, who I will not Odd Duck Phil
not
or,
Duck.
Or Dr.
We,
Phil.
We, you know, I just realized we you have know a lot of Phils.
I know a lot of Phils. The invasion of the Phils.
I didn't know Aces was the Phil you were talking about.
Yeah, Aces.
I just zoned in on that last night. I was like, "Oh yeah, you're two Aces." Yeah. Anyway,
story. We'll tell that story.
Whole
later.
Other story.
But I called up Phil. I was like, "Dude, you want some beer?" He's like, "Not really." I was like, "Really?" He goes, "Well, the wife might drink it." I was like, "Cool. You at home?" "Yep. Got a pitcher?" "Yep. Bring it by." So he came and got a big pitcher full of beer and walked inside, and I drove off somewhere. Now, keep in mind, I'm driving around town with this cooler
open
full of beer.
Container.
And three pitchers.
Open container.
And so it was literally, we left Sarah's dad's house.
Charlie Vortex does not condone driving
with
an open
bad,
container.
Bad. So we left Sarah's dad's house, and I'm very careful cornering, you know, the car, because I don't want this stuff sloshing out in Mel's car, because then, of course, what happens? The car smells like beer forever. So I'm rolling down the street, and I kid you not five blocks from her house, there's three squad cars and a gaggle of cops.
And you do a...
In my head, it played out like E.T., the roadblock and the FBI, only they had guns instead of walkie-talkies. It was like that. So as we kind of... And I'm, you know, just under the speed limit, crawling up to this thing, and the guy kind of does that Texas Ranger cock of the head as we roll past, and I give him a little one of these salute things, and we just roll right through. Nobody says anything, but it's like, okay. So we get over here, and I fill up all the pitchers at my house, having already filled up Mel's, and then I'm knocking on doors in the apartment complex. Hey, there's Nick
drink
beer. Of
people you know.
Well, yeah.
It wasn't like you were just going door to door.
It wasn't just random. You want to buy some cookies?
What's the catch? No, it's free beer, really. It's just giving it away.
My neighbor's like, "What are you going to do with it?" I was like, "If I can't find people to give it to, I'm going to pour it out." She says, "That's alcohol abuse." I said, "I know. I don't even drink beer, and I feel bad." I looked at Billy. He's helping me. I've got a juvenile delinquent now.
So not only are
I've got him roped
you're not
into
only
this.
Transporting an open container, you also are contributing to the delinquency of a minor.
Yeah.
Not to mention, he's not old enough to serve.
I looked at him. I said, "Dude, if this was Dr. Pepper, I don't think I could. I'm having problems throwing it out, and it's beer. If it was Dr. Pepper or something that I liked, I don't think I could do it." So we filled every nook and cranny, and I didn't pull the cups out of the cupboard. I probably could have, but there's a limit to how much beer you can salvage, you know. And I pulled the bottle.
I can't
of the
believe
thing
that you had
poured
to,
it out.
Yeah,
the
I
rest
can't believe you
it.
Had to pour the rest out. That's just
so. If only our Traveling the Vortex friends lived closer, we could have had.
You
we
all would have had beer.
We could have had a mixer.
We'd had a party tonight. That would have been fun.
So instead, I called Glenn and said, "I'm ready to record tonight." And he said, "Oh, good." I said, "Come thirsty." And he's working on his...
I'm on glass number two.
Glass number two. Is it better out of that second one?
It is. It's that not top, quite as flat. I think the problem is...
That
one
didn't have a lid on
yeah,
it, so. But we'll pour that one out.
It's losing its air, so...
But it's going fast, so...
Anyway.
If Glenn doesn't make it through the end of the podcast, it'll be just the one of me.
He sits his beer down. All right.
Well, not real beer. I just said I don't drink.
There is something special that happened this weekend, and we're going to talk about it in a week from now, so we'll move on.
We'll move on. So there we go.
We should say congratulations to two
very say congratulations. Very, very big, heartfelt, warm-wished congratulations to Sarah.
just Sarah. Congratulations, Sarah.
She got married this weekend.
Sarah Who Knits on
Sarah
Twitter.
Sarah Who Knits on Twitter. Her. At Sarah Who Knits with an H.
Well, if you're on Twitter, you know how to follow people.
Well, because it could be Sarah, S-A-R-A.
Oh, yeah. You're clarifying that. But I'm clarifying that. You put the at in there.
Well, I always put the at
in
there.
Yeah. Don't treat people like they're dumb. No. Just kidding. Go.
Dude, I was on Twitter
Keith's not here this week. I have to pick on somebody.
I was on Twitter for how long before I figured out what a hashtag was?
Oh, yeah, that's true.
I mean, come on.
You were the technical Neanderthal. Yeah, Twitter Neanderthal.
I'm the Twitter Neanderthal. I'm a twit. who did she marry again?
Some guy we know.
I don't know.
It was a lot of fun.
I can hear people. I can hear them out there. They're in their cars and they're screaming, "Get on with it!"
All right, we're going to move on to news.
News.
So much for our segue. Actually, there is one piece of housekeeping.
We still haven't congratulated him.
One piece. He'll be back next week. We'll congratulate him then.
All right, we'll do it then.
He's not like he's going to listen to this podcast.
That's true.
The guy's cruising to Latin America,
and he's not going to listen to it when he gets back. We could say all kinds of bad, horrible things about him.
Wow. What should we... we should come up with some good ones.
He's short.
He's not short, though. I'm shorter than Keith.
Are you?
Yeah. Slightly.
At the table, it's
He's
hard
skinny,
to tell.
But that's not a bad thing.
Yeah.
Especially when you look at us.
He's too skinny.
Yeah, maybe.
He's got a horrible, mad man crush on Matt Smith.
And Nathan Fillion. I think everybody knows that. All right, so we can't really talk bad about him. We're going to do a little bit of housekeeping, though, before we start news. A certain somebody...
Should we put this on the YouTube page, too?
...made some comments last week that might not have been entirely...
2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago. That may not have been entirely correct.
I stand by my decision. I've made up my mind, but yeah. There's... Okay, so official retraction time. we were discussing on one of our many, and I blame you guys fully for this because it was a tangent and it wasn't something we were supposed to be talking about at all. But since it came up, we always talk about credit where credit's due. Well, I want to talk about where taking away where it shouldn't have been, and I've been credited with this, and I probably shouldn't be because I'm wrong. Apparently, maybe. We were on a tangent about Bond. And I had made...
What else is new?
I had made the comment that because Mel and I were working our way through them, you asked, what are we up to? And I think we were up to Moonraker at that point. And I'd said, you know, it was interesting going back and watching these now, knowing that Roger Moore is gay, that he just doesn't quite... And you were, of all people, you were blown away by this news.
I mean, not there would be anything wrong with that.
No, let's clarify.
But I would have thought I would have heard of it.
We're not... I'm in no way, shape, or form... lambasting anybody for being gay. I'm the furthest person who could possibly do that. But the bottom line is, this guy was Bond, and he was and all this stuff. And as a kid, you kind of idolize this. And then I found out he was gay, and I was like, wow, okay. And you didn't know that. And it surprised me that you didn't know that. And it stuck with me after the podcast that you didn't know that. And I began to second-guess myself and go, huh, why didn't Glenn know this? So, in typical Traveling the Vortex fashion, I did my research after the fact. Now, I distinctly remember seeing this. This was a big deal. It was on the news. It was all over the place that Roger Moore had come out. And it was shortly after that boat trip movie with Cuba Gooding Jr. came out that Roger Moore's in playing a gay man. And he was hysterical. And I remember, unfortunately, watching that movie and thinking, well, it's kind of cool that Roger Moore did that because, you know, he's gay. And he can just be gay and have fun with it. That's awesome. Good for you, Roger Moore. I went back after the podcast and I have searched high and low. And I can find no evidence of anywhere ever reporting that Roger Moore is gay. The internet has been scrubbed of this information. It does not exist anymore. He obviously he's a big fundraiser for UNICEF.
Yeah.
In fact, he's been knighted for it.
Uh-huh.
And he's more proud of that than he is.
Moore.
He's more proud of that than he is. He's actually got two knighthoods, one in England and one in another country, Denmark or somewhere. I think I mentioned that. But he's a double knight. But he's more proud of his work with UNICEF than he is of his work with James Bond.
Huh.
And as an actor in general. And I think it's great because
he's
a fantastic humanitarian. He's been married four times, all to women. And while
which
not,
doesn't always mean something.
Which not necessarily an indicator. Maybe that's why they left. I don't know. But I found nothing to back my story up. Now, I maintain that watching these and watching him kiss badly may be a very strong indicator for that. However, I would like to apologize personally to Sir Roger Moore for outing him on the podcast when apparently he is not gay. And maybe he's a big enough humanitarian that he'll think it's funny and he won't care if this does get back to him. But
I
was apparently wrong.
I was just shocked and amazed that I didn't know that.
I was too.
But I left it alone. And I took what you said as truth. And let's see, we recorded Monday, Tuesday. It sort of just percolated.
Started grinding on you.
And I thought, why wouldn't I know that? How strange. And so I just let it set on Tuesday. And then Wednesday, it was about up to here. And I thought, you know what? Why haven't I researched this? There's at least an I told you so. Possibly waiting for me here. So I went online and did the same thing. And I scoured the internet. And I did extra research. I went everywhere I could think. Because I didn't want to call you out. And then you go, aha, here it is. And have some obscure link somewhere. So I went everywhere I could possibly think of. And I think my tweet was, well, way to go, Sean. You outed Sir Roger Moore on a podcast. And there's no indication that he was ever said that he was gay.
Well, that was actually the second one. The first one you sent me was in regards to what we posted, well, what I posted. That
I was even going to bring that up.
You weren't going to bring that up?
Okay. No.
I made another minor boo-boo, and you said, we can't confirm this. I took it off. And by the way, you outed Sir Roger Moore.
I forgot about that. That's right. It was on the heels of that one.
And so that was what kind of, you know. So here I am, and I'm defending myself over. We're texting back and forth, and I'm defending myself till I'm blue in the face. Dude, I promise you, it was there. I saw it. I know it was true. I know this happened. And you're like, it's okay. I believe you. By the way. Roger Moore's not gay. And I was like, about that. So here's the deal. I remember seeing this thing. So, yeah, I don't know. The memory cheats. I got nothing. I could have sworn he was gay. Maybe he is.
He might be.
He might be.
But there's nothing official.
And as we've heard over and over again, not that there's anything wrong with that.
No.
But it just, yeah. So.
But if he is, he is securely in the closet still. So.
We spent way too much
all right,
time on
to,
this.
Yeah, we just can't talk any James Bond news without Dancity. All right, so in Doctor Who news.
Got me all flustered.
Arthur Darvill, who plays Rory Pond.
Do you have that story?
I don't. I thought you had all these. What was that, Twitter? Okay. Well, Sean looks it up. Apparently, Arthur Darvill, who plays Rory Pond. Yes, it is Rory Pond.
Rory Pond.
apparently, his house was broken into recently. There was an announcement on Twitter by a follower, I believe.
I can't read that one. There's a couple of expletives
there. Yeah. This is still a family show. We're free to talk about the free-flowing beer in your fridge, but we can't go into the expletives.
And Roger Moore's sexual proclivities. But we won't say
nothing
that.
Wrong with it.
The unbearable randomness of being. The actual quote from Twitter, Arthur Darvill, who, by the way, is at Ratty Burville, RattyBurvill. Whoever broke into our...
I love that name.
It is. Whoever broke into our flat today and stole...
Oh, it's his tweet.
This is his tweet. Yeah, this is where it came from. Whoever broke them...
I'm ready.
Okay.
I'm not editing that.
Whoever broke into our flat today and stole our computers, iPods, and trashed my room needs to go expletive deleted themselves. And there's a picture. And wow, they did a number on his room.
So he did tweet a picture.
He sent a picture of this. He then later apologized. Sorry, so many C words have been flying around. We're all okay. Off to the pub.
Oh, it was the C word?
Not in his tweet, but apparently there may have been other ones later.
Oh, my.
I don't know what the C word is in England. Maybe that's something big. But yeah, I don't know if they know whose room they broke into and they were doing this for fun. But it's certainly uncool.
I mean, that's totally uncool. Yeah. Worse than Karen Gillan breaking John Barrowman's counter.
Yeah, I don't know why.
My gosh.
Now, it's interesting because in his photo, there's an electric guitar in there. Yeah, but they didn't take that. Didn't take the they just wanted the electronics.
Well, but it looks like only half of the guitar is there. Doesn't it? Maybe it's just a weird picture.
I think there's just junk in tossed in front of it. But, so
there must have been something on that stand, that TV stand, though.
This is the interesting thing.
That's so
now,
too bad.
I certainly not. This looks like a keyboard back here too. Maybe it's Rock Band stuff.
maybe
he's got the pro the pro setup because this looks like a keyboard on a stand. Now, obviously, this is a very, very tiny slice of an image into Arthur Darvill's life. Unlike somebody who comes over with an iPhone with fantastic camera resolution.
You just said, put it online. I did it.
And scans the entire DVD selection of somebody that lives here. But just based on this picture, it looks like Arthur Darvill lives in a dorm room.
No.
Am I wrong?
Really does.
I mean, he's got
it
this
really
tiny
does.
Little
well,
room.
That's got, and I think that's a keyboard there underneath that. Up there in the top? Isn't that maybe
that's
an electric keyboard?
This looks like a
I mean, he's obviously
stand.
A musician.
Yeah. And then you mentioned the TV tray. This looks like this came from like the Goodwill store for like $1.95. Or what is that?
So what
£2. So I'm concerned that Arthur Darvill is not being paid enough by Stephen Moffat.
What we've decided is, Arthur Darvill lives in a very small flat in the UK. So I thought it was cool. It's a picture of all the Sonics.
That's very cool.
Isn't that cool?
I was lost as to why you were showing me that when we were talking about this. But okay.
Yeah, I just came across it. I was looking for the next news story, I got distracted. Ooh, squirrel!
It's for the same reason that you're going on about something, and I'm over here showing Keith, check out this Obi-Wan Kenobi statue that just came out.
Yeah,
and you're like looking over the hood of the computer going, what are you looking
there
at
you go.
There?
Yeah, I was in the middle of something else, yes. No.
So we certainly feel bad, and our thoughts and whatever go out to Arthur Darvill.
Yeah,
for being
absolutely.
Because that just sucks.
Absolutely. Because no one wants to go through
that. Thieves are outside my apartment at this moment.
Well, I don't have this next one. I hope you do.
Sure.
I went looking.
Throw it my way. What do we got
next?
You
brought all the news to the table this week.
Well, I maybe have it.
Yeah.
Although
I'm used to you and Keith going through it all anyway.
Throw it to me and I'll tell you what I got.
All right, fake trailer. Well, we should put a warning out there to people.
We don't know it's fake.
Well, no, we should put
we
a warning
out. We don't know it's real.
No, that's just it. We need to put a warning out there because there is no official word coming out of BBC or BBC America as to the release date.
What? Is this real?
What do you want?
Tony Scott died?
Who's Tony Scott?
Director, Top Gun.
What?
Brother of Ridley?
Get out of here. No, I didn't know that.
Wow.
Just recently?
33 minutes ago. Apparently, apparent suicide.
He was being...
I hate the news.
He's being looked at to direct the sequel that they were getting ready to do.
Yeah.
Oh.
Okay.
Well.
Scroll through that.
This just in.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Tony Scott directed Top Gun and Crimson Tide.
Right.
And, he's done a bunch. Not quite as successful a name,
nothing
obviously,
lately.
As Ridley Scott.
Yeah, and Nothing Lately.
Which is his brother.
Yeah.
But Nothing Lately. But still.
Wow, that's too bad.
That sucks.
Aww.
Okay.
Anyway, but we should certainly warn our listeners that I'm going to have to out you, man. Because... Not in that way. No.
You think that's not already news?
We have been very careful.
Me and Roger Moore like this.
And that's how you know.
Trust me.
All right. Oh, my gosh. All right.
Keith's going to come back and go, so how was it? We're going to like, eh.
Nothing really happened.
Nothing happened.
We just talked about books.
All right.
We've been very careful.
Well,
because
some
there
of us
has
have been
very
careful.
There has been a lot of misinformation out there because people are trying to speculate when the release of... Now, we are very hopeful for certain dates. Don't get me wrong, because we have some plans to go along with that.
August,
our schedule.
I was
now,
hopeful for August 1st. Nope. I was hopeful for August 2nd. Nope.
Our schedule hinges on release dates. So that being said, we've been very, very careful until Tuesday morning. You already talked a little bit about this. His goof that he's referring to earlier is Sean may have posted something to our website and to Facebook that wasn't quite good.
And to everybody else's Facebook page that I could remotely think might be interested.
Wait, did you go to Whovian's and
Kansas
City? Oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe we should address this then. All right. So...
They don't listen.
The BBC nor BBC America have officially said anything. There has been speculation. There has been things that have come out. However, recently, as of today, I believe, there is now a trailer that is circulating the inner tubes.
It's circulating Facebook.
Well, the inner tubes. I'm sure you can find it. I'm sure
you couldn't
find it
elsewhere.
I couldn't. You're right. I did do.
So
I did go out.
Let's clarify this.
We did see the post on.
So we're recording this Sunday night, August 19th at 11:32 p.m. Central Standard Daylight.
We're in daylight.
It's dark out. I don't know if it's daylight or
every
not.
Every time you start to say a time, I'm going to either hold up a D. Or an S.
Okay. It's 11:32 p.m. Central Daylight Time.
Or I guess it's this.
Yeah. Which language are we doing this in? And as of yet, there has been no announcement.
Right.
So take that for, you know, that is gospel. I can give you that. Sunday,
there is
August
no
19th, 11:32 p.m. Central Daylight Time. No announcement.
What
no
normally
date.
Happens, though, is we will talk about this on the show and say it's not happening yet, and the following morning before it releases, there will be an announcement. But
that's why
that's
I want to get this out, because
there.
They'll probably have a date by the time you get this edited and posted.
Exactly. So, however, there is a trailer going, and we said fake trailer. We're not sure it is fake, but all indicators point to the fact that it might have been faked, because it's a really poor resolution quality. It alleges to have played Sunday morning in the
Sunday early morning, like around 7:15 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time.
Right, which would have been 6:15 on BBC America. It's relatively well done if it is, and the guy that is tagging on it sounds very much like the guy that is the voice of BBC America.
Yeah,
the commercial guy. So it looks very good, and whoever did this. Did a very good job of making it look like
now,
but however
it is utilizing pieces of the official trailer. It's not like one of those like when people were making Star Wars trailers that utilized pieces of Braveheart and they've gone in and animated lightsabers on the crowd. I mean, this is all stuff from the trailer. It's all
what's the trailer
it's been released. It's the trailer.
It's cut down.
It's cut down, but it's the trailer with an end tag
graphic on it.
That instead of the original graphic that said coming this fall, now says September 8th on BBC America.
Right.
We got excited. I got very excited again.
Well, we didn't get excited.
Well, you didn't get excited.
I've been burned before.
Yeah.
Tuesday morning for one.
I got very excited again, but we decided, wait, let's do our research this time.
I'm sorry. I'm an old news guy. I got to take everything with a grain.
I should trust
your
instinct. You're like an old dog bitten into something, and I should just trust that there's a rabbit there or not. And you didn't even get off the porch and thump your tail this time. So it was like there was nothing there. Anyway, we cannot confirm this. We've checked. There's no announcement on BBC America. They are not showing this trailer on their website.
Which is typical. What'll happen, which is not typical, because what'll happen is when they show something to air, they will often put it right on their website right afterwards. Because this does nothing. I mean, if they have actually have an official date, you want to start getting that out there as soon as possible. You want to start plugging this to get as many eyes on that date as possible. So if this were actually run this morning on BBC America at 6 a.m. or 7 a.m. Eastern time, they're going to want that on the website and get people excited, get people pumped about this. Now, the release date for this particular trailer, fake or not, says Saturday, September 8th.
Correct.
Which is contrary to what the speculation for BBC One's release date, which is still not official, by the way, we should mention, as September 1st. Which goes in line with, maybe they listened to our podcast where we faked this. Because that goes in line with my statement last week, or 2 weeks ago, whichever one it was. Last week. That I don't suspect that the BBC America, at the very least, will release this season on September 1st, because that's Labor Day weekend.
It is our belief.
The 8th would be the following weekend.
That the Series 7 will air on BBC. This is pure speculation, but this is our belief that will air on BBC One in England on September 1st, and it will air in the States and BBC America
the following week
on September 8th. Yeah. However, that's just our belief. And this trailer, which is currently circulating on Facebook, we could not find it on BBC America's website. We could not find it on YouTube. We could not find it anywhere else other than on this site.
Facebook post.
Which seems to be, wow, that's a really lame way to advertise something that this many people have been excited about.
And this guy that posted it, it's almost like he recorded it, right, and put this up?
That's kind of what I...
Yeah, I mean, that's just kind of the impression that you get. Because they said this is when it aired. You know, it's like somebody saw it and was trying to break some news that really maybe isn't there.
Yeah, so. And again, we've not found it on any other Doctor Who site. We've not found it on any of the official channels. We've not found it on anywhere that we can indicate that there's a shred of for sure to this.
Right.
So we're going to treat it as not news. I mean, if you catch it, don't get too excited, because we're going ahead and throw in the fake label on it.
Right.
We think, you know...
I think we can safely say we're 90% sure it's fake.
If this was an episode of a certain show on Discovery Channel, I think we could say plausible but busted.
Yes. Without going frame by frame and making sure they can actually Photoshop it. Yeah, we're going
to
say that.
So there's that. And so I wish to throw out yet another retraction and apology to anybody who got real excited over my post and thought, all right, September 1st. Because apparently not.
That's why we have editors.
So there's that.
No, everybody makes mistakes, Sean, and I totally understand where you were coming from, because I even looked at that and thought, oh, wow, that looks legit.
It really did.
However, I think where we will find out for certain the release date will be a certain screening that's happening next week in New York.
Next week in New York, August 25th, which has been another date that's been bandied about quite often, but again, no guarantee yet, is the New York preview of Asylum of the Daleks. Apparently, 800 available tickets were sold in less than 20 minutes, and it is now sold out. So if you don't have a ticket, you ain't going.
Right, yeah.
Unless you know a scalper or... Sir Patrick Stewart happens to be out front scalping tickets. Catch that on Funny or Die.
Yeah. I think we can cross off next week.
Yeah.
Because if it's going to be previewed in the U.S. on that date, they're probably not going to release it simultaneously on BBC America on that date as well. So... Let's just say it's safe to say.
I spent $600 and bought a ticket to the premiere.
And I could have stayed home.
But you could have watched it on TV for free. Oh, that's how Moffat's going to cancel spoilers.
Let's hope. Yeah, there you go. Because we did. Remember all that stuff that leaked last time and he was so upset? Well, but you do get Matt Smith. You do get Arthur Darvill. You do get Karen Gillan, right? They're all going to be there.
Arthur Darvill's not going to be there. Matt Smith, Karen Gillan, and Carolyn Skinner.
Stephen Moffat's not going to be there either.
Moffat's not going to be there.
That's too bad.
He's busy writing.
Yeah, I guess so. He's got a lot on his plate right
now. He's
got
to come up with some sort of Wako Sako Nito 50th anniversary thing. And he hasn't finished season 7
yet.
He's still working on the Christmas special from what I hear. So.
A release date that we are certain of, however, we do have.
We do have that. According to
I'm relying on you to bring all of this up. This is wonderful because you and Keith usually bounce back and forth, and you're just all over
this week. I'm here with you tonight, baby. TV shows on DVD.com has announced that October 9th, which, as usual, the second Tuesday in the month here in North America, will get, finally, story number 53, Ambassadors of Death. DVD release here in the States and all points North America. It is a two-disc set, 7 episodes in that monster. Wow, I didn't know it was that long.
Recolorized, as a matter
and fact, recolorized with some fairly nifty artwork. You can see that.
No, I like that. I think they've gone to this certain style. Have you noticed that?
I like
that release. And I do, with the exception of The Greatest Show in the Galaxy.
I didn't like
that
one.
I did not like that one, yeah. But all of them were looking really good.
The Greatest Show, I thought, had a really funny look for Sylvester McCoy.
I thought so, too.
That I think, is what really kind of...
Yeah.
I didn't mind the rest of it, but just the expression on his face or something.
Can I go off topic for just a second? The picture of Sylvester McCoy that you were showing us the other night was not from the movie. The Chicago TARDIS, we looked at their website. And
it was not?
It was not.
We should talk about that.
We should. It was not hit that, because I actually saw a picture from the movie still, and I went, how could we have thought that that was from the movie? Because his hair is much longer in the movie.
It's
quite short in that picture. So that must have been late 7th season then, because it is the newer, darker clothes. So anyway, our listeners have absolutely no idea what we're talking about, but I thought I'd clarify that while I was thinking about it.
It's probably from Ghostlight.
Could be.
So yeah, October, what did I just say? 9th?
9th, yes. Ambassadors of Death.
Ambassadors of Death, the final Carolyn John story yet to come out. And
that's the final one of that season. The
first
final
season. One of season.
His first season.
And I believe it's the final Pertwee to be released.
That seems
I can't back that one up.
Seems right. No, I think you might be right. I think you might be right.
I think all the rest of Pertwee stories have been released on DVD
We're just about to finish up, or did we just finish up McCoy's releases too now with Greatest Show in the Galaxy? I think that might have been his last.
That might have been. Because we don't have, we've got Planet of the Giants, Vengeance on Varos in September, and Spearhead from Space, Greatest Show in the Galaxy this month. So maybe it is. Maybe that is the last one.
We get Spearhead, but that's already been
released.
Well,
that's a special edition.
Yeah, it'll be
a
special
edition. Well, and so is the other one. And then the special edition of Claws of Access is slated for November.
Yeah. I'm so glad I didn't pick these. But at least special editions.
Having seen Claws of Access, you don't need that one.
Yeah, well. come on. That was a good one.
We're collectors. We've got to have them all.
Pertwee? And Roger Delgado.
And Roger Delgado.
Come on.
So there's that.
Spaghetti monsters, but still.
Repainted crinoids.
Chicago TARDIS had an announcement out this week as well.
Big news from Chicago TARDIS. The Midwest's premier Doctor Who event, according to the new website designed by Mr. Tony Lee, is going on November 23rd through the 25th, which is Thanksgiving weekend. We're still waiting to hear from a certain individual as to whether or not we'll be in attendance.
Whether we have a place to stay. Did you hear that, Dr. Phil?
you're going to call him out. Joining them that Thanksgiving week, obviously the big headliners, Sylvester McCoy and Sophie Aldred. Also announced, Ben Aaronarevich, who's a Seventh Doctor era writer. Some of these were previously announced, so I'm not sure what I'm repeating. Toby Hooduke, the... very funny gentleman.
That's only 3 short months away. We should go through them all in case people are making plans.
So Toby Hooduke, Moths Ate My Doctor Who Scarf. He's a very funny
fantastic book. And fantastic
also Running
audio.
Through Corridors. Gary Russell, script editor for Sarah Jane Adventures and a writer for Doctor Who and Torchwood. Mm-hmm. Andrew Cartmell, who was the script editor during the Seventh Doctor season. So probably some great stories there between him and Sylvester and Sophie. And Ben Aaronarevich. Phil Ford, who's also a producer for the Sarah Jane Adventures and a Doctor Who Torchwood writer. Tony Lee, Doctor Who comics and Big Finish writer.
And hopefully soon to be friend of the show.
And hopefully soon to be friend of the show, Tony Lee. Nicholas Briggs, voice of the Daleks, actor in Torchwood, which we discovered, and Sarah Jane Adventures.
And the upcoming Asylum of the Daleks.
And then several Big Finish actors. We've got Lisa Greenwood, who plays Flip. Philip Oliver, who plays Hex. And Jason Hay Ellery, who is a producer for Big Finish. And Ian McNeice, who played Winston Churchill.
Yes.
in Doctor Who. In
he was also episodes. In Ace Ventura, When Nature Calls.
He was. I recognize, now that you say that, my brain is filled in the missing puzzle piece with why I know this guy in a pith helmet.
That is him.
Okay, that would explain it. So big news there, and according to this, more to come.
More
so,
to come. Yes, we're excited about more to come.
We
too.
Are excited about more so. To come.
We should put out there that if you are planning to go to Chicago, no, yeah, I about said Chicago Comic Con. That just happened. If you are going to Chicago TARDIS and you would like to send us feedback or be a correspondent representative for Traveling the Vortex, give us a call or give us a shout or email or something, and we'll get you set up and hopefully you can do some reports from us.
We're talking to you, Dr. Phil.
Providing we're not actually there.
Well, even if we are there.
Well, I mean, yes, we'd love to hear from another perspective.
Whether we're there or not, man, I would love to have perspective from other people.
Absolutely.
So please,
absolutely.
Send us your feedback, whether it's a phone call or to our Google. Let's go through the list here, Glenn. What have we? How can people, if someone were to go to Chicago TARDIS and have interviews and bumpers and all kinds of interesting stuff, and they thought, if only there was some way I could get this to my friends over at Traveling the Vortex. I know these guys would report on it. How would somebody go about doing that?
Well, Sean, I can tell you that information as soon as I get a ball down there. You just didn't stretch just long enough.
I didn't stretch long enough.
You can contact us on our Google Voice number, which is area code 913-890-3025. That is a long-distance phone call from the United States and overseas. You can also contact us on Twitter at Travel Vortex, or you can contact us individually. Keith Miles is at Vortex Keith. Sean is at Vortex Sean, and I am simply at Vortex Glenn. We make that easy for you, so you can remember those. You can also find us on Facebook, which is facebook.com/travelingthevortex. And there is a contact on our website, travelingthevortex.com. Just click on Contact Us, and there's a form to fill out. It will send us email. However, you can also contact us at feedback@travelingthevortex.com. Did I cover them all?
Well,
we have a YouTube page if you want to
YouTube
put a comment on there.
Too.
And we also would love to have feedback on our iTunes link. So if you want to go to iTunes.
We've
had some reviews. I haven't looked lately, but we've had some.
There may be feedback
really
on
good
our
reviews.
iTunes.
Yeah. No, I
leave
you go
that
there.
To people that, you know,
if you'd
are
like
in
to
know,
give us then. 5 stars on YouTube on iTunes, that would be fantastic. So anyway, it gets us a little more publicity that way as well.
I'm not going to complain about more publicity.
Yeah. That I cover them all?
I believe
all?
You did. All if right. In the immortal words of Matt Smith, if you need anything else, just try making a wish. Reach
good.
Us that way.
All right, let's move on to feedback.
Feedback. Finally. Feedback. We've got some feedback.
Yeah. All right.
Slightly different.
Finally something I get to read. I do have this pulled up, Sean.
Oh, good.
Our first and only bit of feedback. No, our first bit of feedback, because we do have a little bit of other feedback, is from Chrissy. And we'll start there.
Hi, Chrissy.
Comic question, dear Vortex boys. I did the comic question thing, which I don't usually do, but in the absence of Keith, I did it for his benefit.
You just like poking fun at me tonight. And admittedly, it's been with good reason.
First off, a big congrats to Keith and Sarah on their wedding, even though they are on holiday for a while.
Oh, they got married this weekend. That's what
Sarah
we did.
Sarah and Keith.
Sarah and Keith
right.
got married.
That's what it
I
was.
I thought he just left us and went on holiday.
Oh,
he stowed away in her luggage or something.
I wish we'd have been invited to that wedding. I saw the pictures.
I wish we'd have been invited to the honeymoon.
Yeah, I'd rather gone to Cosmo. I saw the pictures on Facebook and everyone looked great, except I never saw a picture of you guys in your chucks. I heard so much about the chucks that I was looking forward to seeing them, and I thought of that too. I took a bunch of pictures and put them on Facebook, and I never took a picture of us in our chucks. Hopefully Keith has some actual official wedding pictures that he'll be able to post later that will show us.
I don't know if I did either. I have not yet uploaded my photos to the Facebook or the website yet.
Coming soon.
So
we'll see.
We'll
keep
see.
Looking.
If, we'll see if there's
keep looking,
Chuck's
Chrissy.
Photos
we'll
in
see
there.
See if there are Chuck's pictures. Sean.
Yes, ma'am.
I could just picture you diving over the table to intercept Keith from reading the feedback that talked about the Keeper of Trakken. It made me laugh. I want to refute a few things that Scott from Philly brought up about the story, but I'm not sure how much I can say. Even though Keith isn't recording with you guys, I'm sure he'll hear this at some point.
Maybe.
I'll say this. There is a Big Finish story with Five and Nyssa that deals with some of what Scott talked about. In fact, it would pair up nicely with The Keeper of Trocken when you get around to when you all get around to the story. If you want to know which one, Facebook message me or something and I'll tell you. Even on holiday, I still don't trust Keith not to go looking for spoilers. That's certainly true. All right. I'm still woefully behind on Big Finish reviews you've done, but here are my thoughts on Time Lash.
You haven't missed
out on
much.
Which is not a Big Finish, which we reviewed last week.
We did review Time Lash last week.
I don't understand the bile that fans have for this story. Sure, it's not one of the best, and it's not completely and absolutely terrible either. I remember having the same reaction to Silver Nemesis and to The Twin Dilemma as well, now that I think of it. Oh, no, Twin Dilemma is bad. Okay, that was
I'm going to reserve judgment on that one
that
until I rewatch
me.
It.
Oh, my gosh.
Because I fell into that camp of Silver Nemesis being absolute
I've seen Twin
junk.
Dilemma 3 times now and recently, and because I keep trying to find something in it. All right. Silver Nemesis, I would agree with her statement on that. I went back.
So much more enjoyable.
Well, you remember how I was like, oh, this isn't a good story. And then we reviewed it, and I went, well, this wasn't bad. So,
it's a little goofy at times, but it's still good.
It's just sometimes you revisit them, and you look at them from a different perspective.
Watching with friends makes all the difference.
It really does. There are some good ideas here, and the Sixth Doctor is actually quite mellow here, much more reminiscent of the Doctor Colin Baker plays in the modern Big Finish. And Herbert is absolutely adorable, especially when old What's-Her-Name shows up. I can't remember her name, but she and Herbert were cute together. I do wish Perry had been given more to do than be chained up and threatened with disfigurement and an arranged marriage to Mr. Ugly, and I don't know which is worse. Would I start a newbie on this story? Probably not, but I think it's good enough to own.
Hooray!
I would agree. Keith. Oh, sorry. It wasn't addressing Keith. Keith said something about Time Lash
good,
that I want to
here.
Comment on. Before we watched Time Lash on Friday Night Who, I had not seen it from beginning to end. I started watching it
once
and got interrupted. Thank you, Sean. Yeah.
It's a little word. Sometimes
the beer.
You trip over
them. Everything's getting hazy.
Hey, speaking of, your glass is empty. I'll go take
empty.
Care of
oh,
that while
would you?
You
I will finish this. But... All right, let me start that line again.
Can you play me into the kitchen?
All right, Keith said something about Time Lash I want to comment on before we watch Time Lash for Friday Night's Who. Friday Night Who? Yeah, I shouldn't be doing this now. I had not seen it from beginning to end. I had started watching it once and got interrupted and never finished. But I had seen The Caves of Adrazani and The Talons of Wang Chien prior to this. And I only used those because because that's what Sean held up as examples of great Who, and I won't dispute his claim. I will. Going on to say, and I've seen Carnival of Monsters and Genesis of the Daleks and other really good classic Who stories, and I still enjoyed Time Lash well enough. At least, I enjoyed it for what it was. So liking Time Lash isn't a matter of, oh, you just haven't seen any really awesome classic Who is. Or how really awesome classic Who is. Quite honestly, maybe it's just not as bad as everyone else says it is. With that, I'm going to go batten down the hatches against the hordes of angry fanboys and await your latest thoughts and opinions and tangents. Always tangents. Chrissy. Thank you, Chrissy.
As always, thank you.
Yeah, no, I'm going to take reservations with Talon's Wang Chien.
Well,
he did use that.
I used it as an example.
You and I both come down on the side of that's really not the best example of great classic Who.
Yeah,
so.
The fandom at large really is all over that, and we don't think so. But that's one of the reasons, quite honestly, that we're kind of saving that one, because we want to chuck Keith into the deep end of that controversy see what happens.
Well, it's not a controversy because you don't see a lot of people come
well, that's true.
On the other
I'm
side
making
of it.
A controversy.
It's controversial to us because we're... Well, we'll talk about talents when we get there for the most part.
I don't want to spoil it, but I can say maybe sometime around Halloween this year.
Okay. All right.
Is that a werewolf?
That's it. No, that's not it for feedback. We have one more piece of feedback from... Odd Duck Phil, and we'll play that now.
Hey, Sean, it's Phil. Got a little ways into the podcast, and now, unfortunately, I'm stuck thinking about the Bill Cosby as the Dr. Vlad. Maybe making the Daleks a delicious jello pudding using a sonic screwdriver, making into the faces and the funny noises. So, needless to say, I know you guys are against it, but I found it hilarious and would love to see it, even as a farce. But anyway, that's all I have. Talk to you later.
That's actually a pretty good Bill Cosby.
That's a very good Bill Cosby.
With the pudding in the...
Phil,
I have more beer.
He's stumbling his way through the time vortex. As a spoof, I would agree with you. As a farce, I think it would be hysterical.
Yes.
As an official, this is what we've got for you. It's as good an idea as New Coke. It ranks right. There's only one person at the table that gets this joke. Oh, he's here tonight.
I am here tonight. I remember New Coke.
You remember New Coke.
Oh, Keith would have sat here and gone, I remember it.
He
I was
not.
Three, but I remember it.
You know what I miss?
What do you miss?
Crystal Pepsi.
Oh, Crystal Pepsi was awesome.
That was the best stuff
it
ever.
It was. Well,
I'm not even a Pepsi fan.
It was like
fan.
Fruit Pepsi. It was awesome. It was
and it was clear.
Yeah.
And it tasted like Pepsi.
It didn't taste exactly like Pepsi.
Well, no, it tasted like fruit Pepsi.
It tasted like fruity Pepsi, but it was good. It was really good.
Stuff.
It was very close to Pepsi. Anybody remembers Crystal Light, give us a holler. Crystal Light. Crystal Pepsi, give us a holler.
But, yeah. They always take the good stuff away.
I know.
One other... Not necessarily feedback, but I was very touched by this, as we got a tweet to our at Trouble Vortex account from Hulakian 22140, who said, listening to at Travel... Oh, wait. Where did it go? There it goes. Oh, she sent us another one. Oh, that's why that's different. Listening to at Travel Vortex's first podcast. Wish I had found it earlier. Can't wait to listen to the rest of them. And thank you so much.
Absolutely.
It's always nice
I'm
to have a new listener.
And
glad you discovered us. And please hang in there because we get better.
Because if you've started at episode one, then we do get a lot better, I promise.
The second one is back message, listening to Travel Vortex, reading fan fiction, browsing Pinterest, and tweeting. What a great Sunday. Apparently that's how she spent her Sunday with us. So that's always appreciated.
Well, remarkably, that's how I spent my Sunday.
Yeah. Me too. Well, no, I spent my Sunday delivering beer.
Delivering beer.
I was like
town.
Santa Claus today. There were sleigh bells and music and Billy, and I knocked on people's doors and go, hi, would you like some beer? I was the most awesome Santa ever. I was way cooler than that dude at the mall.
The sound of beer sloshing in the cooler.
Well, then we get it up. Of course, you carry the thing back. I'm warning him.
Part two.
I'm warning you. Be careful when we carry this up. But, of course, you know, when you pitchers of beer in a box and this and that, I mean, we spilled some beer. Billy apparently cracked open the lid just a little bit. And it kind of started. And he's like, not on my shoes. And he's freaking out. So we were just growing. Because at that point, and neither one of us were like, you know, I don't like the smell of beer. I know there's some, it's like coffee. Like, I like the smell of coffee, but I don't like to drink coffee.
Right.
I don't like to drink beer, and I don't like the smell of beer.
Well, so, how's that like coffee?
Well, but just. Okay. Since you brought this up, you drink coffee.
I don't drink coffee. No, well, I do sometimes, but only in desperation.
And you drink beer.
Yes.
Keith drinks coffee.
Yes.
He drinks beer.
He drinks a lot of coffee.
He drinks a lot
and
of beer.
Probably drinks more beer than he should, too.
I've made this correlation. Coffee drinkers drink beer.
See, I don't drink coffee that much. I drink coffee.
But you drink it.
Every once in a while. And it's mostly when I don't have a soda in the morning to make up for it. I have to have a little bit of that caffeine to get me going.
See, I
last time
people
I had,
who don't drink beer, I'll bet don't drink coffee.
Before
either.
I went on vacation, the last time I had coffee was probably 6 months ago. Last time I had beer, less than a week. So you know,
it was tonight.
Well, I mean, since then. So,
with very few exceptions, people who drink coffee also drink beer. Anyway,
so
we get back in the car, and of course, both of us just reek of beer. And I looked at Billy. I was like, okay, here's the plan. We're going to get home, and we're going to come stumbling in the door, going. Your mom's going to take a look at us and go, what'd you do with the beer? Well, you drank it. What do you think we're going to do with it?
You didn't expect us to dump it out.
I was a lot of beer. Pour it out, woman.
Good news. Billy likes beer.
Ha 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 I'm pretty sure that a couple of these comments could get answered. Needless to say, that didn't happen.
Wow, but no.
I throw that out there right now. But, yeah, so.
Oh, wow. Okay. Should we move on?
Oh, please.
All right. Well, we decided to take this opportunity this week, since Keith was going to be gone on holiday, to review some books this week that we've been reading. And we're going to do it in chronological. We're going to do it in Dr. Chronological order. I can't even talk when I'm not drinking. And so we're going to start with you, Sean, and you are reviewing
A Morality Tale by David Bishop. Those people that die must...
No, wait. You got to do it in the radio.
Well, I was doing like this. This is a quote.
Oh, okay. All right. Because
I was trying to do John Pertwee.
Keith would have done the... He would have done it in the Gary...
I know that. But give me a minute to get to Gary Owens. Those people that die must die. It's history. It's already happened. And there's nothing we can do to prevent it, Sarah. East End gangster Tommy Ramsey emerges from prison in 1952, determined to retake control of his territory on the streets of Shoreditch. Really? That's where this took place? That was London. But new arrivals threaten his grip on all illegal activity in the area. An evangelical minister at St. Luke's Church is persuading people to seek redemption for their sins. A new gang is claiming the streets, and a watchmender called Dr. John Smith is leading a revolt against Ramsey Mob's protection racket. But when Tommy strikes back against his enemies, a far more terrifying threat is revealed. Within hours, the city's air begins turning into nerve gas, and thousands are killed by the choking fumes. London is dying. That took far too long to cue that up.
You shouldn't have mentioned it. I could have cut that out. But now that you've brought it to their attention, I'm leaving the long, awkward click, click, click in there.
I don't remember what the last thing you had me look up was, but I had it ready to go, and then I got off of that to go look something else up, and then I forgot to come back to it.
That's what tabs are for. Even Safari has tabs, and I know you hate Google.
No, I used tabs. I just didn't there. Because I had that... I have a certain number of
Sean, tabs. I get the impression you didn't like this book.
Where to begin?
Where?
Dave, I was excited about this because this is one that our library has, and it's a Third Doctor story. And it's Third Doctor and Sarah Jane. And so it's like, well, there probably aren't too many of these. I know there's a I don't want to say a glutton, but there's a bunch of Eighth Doctor adventure novels out there that
absolutely.
Can read. And obviously, I love Eighth Doctor. So it was gravitating toward one of those, and I thought, no, maybe we should wait, and I'll hold off on that. And then, of course, you got me. As the Silent Stars Go By, which is an 11th Doctor and Ice Warrior book. I was like, oh, but we might actually do some more Ice Warrior stuff in the near future.
Right, right.
If Stephen Moffat's not lying to us again. Not that he has said anything one way or the other. So I saw this one, I thought, Third Doctor, that'd be cool.
Yeah, but he's sort of hinted.
He's kind of hinted at that. I thought Third Doctor would be cool in Sarah Jane. And I've read, believe it or not, David Bishop before. He's written several Star Trek novels.
That's where I knew the name from. Okay. And you said that, and I thought, I know that author from somewhere. Just the few that I have read, I think I've read one of his.
Of course, this was his first BBC novel. Maybe that makes a difference. But... So I got into it, and I was very excited. And interesting things, the things that I liked. I'll cover that stuff first.
Okay.
This is apparently based on a true story. It's set during the backdrop of real events.
Okay.
There was, in fact, a killer smog in London in this time, and an undisclosed number of people died from it. And it had to do. It was a combination of things. It was one of those weird perfect storm things that there was a low pressure center that moved in and, you know, kind of kept things down and cold, and it was keeping the pollution in the air. And this was after the war, and this is in the Lower East End of London, where there's a lot of industrial factory smoke that's been belched out into the atmosphere for a long time. And it was this pressure system was keeping that smog and pollution down. It was also cold, so people were burning more coal to try and keep warm. And that went up and added to it. And just the weird conflux of this stuff basically turned the air poisonous. Wow. And it was to the point where they were ordering evacuations. And the government at the time, it's one of those things that they're pretty much now vilified and being blamed for not releasing the full details on how many perished. The church, the St. Luke's Church that's mentioned here on the Jack cover, apparently is a real church. And the mob struggles that were going on in the East End at the time are apparently loosely based on real mobsters in London at the time. Okay, cool. You're going to take the doctor, drop him off in a real historical event. That's kind of nifty. Here's the problems with the book. It's a Third Doctor and Sarah Jane book with very little Third Doctor and Sarah Jane.
And that's too bad.
The bits that he writes sound like Pertwee. There was only one or two lines that was kind of like, that's a stretch, or simply because it's a repeat of something I've heard in an episode. It's like, well, you lifted that just to, you know, kind of drive home that's who this character is. And sometimes that's allowed, and sometimes you're pulling something that's like, really? You used that one? I thought Sarah Jane, for the most part, acted and sounded like Sarah Jane. She kind of guides the doctor there. There's a photograph that they find, and this is set shortly after, I want to say shortly after Invasion of the Dinosaurs is when this one is set.
Okay.
They've come back.
So, towards the end of Pertwee's run.
Towards the end of Pertwee's run. And they've come back from one of the space adventures and stopped off in home in London, present day. And she's doing research on something, and she stumbles across this photograph of the doctor and this gangster, Tony Ramsey, shaking hands in front of this church, which looks like it's been bombed out and destroyed. And so she's kind of like, dude, you were there. And it's got the date and everything on it. He goes, well, I haven't been yet. So she kind of pressures him to, well, let's go find out. Let's go check into this. Let's go see what happens. And so she reads up on it and finds out about this killer smog and is kind of trying to convince the doctor that you have a time machine. We can go back there and stop this from happening. And thus the quote on the back that, well, the people that died must die. That's history. That's part of the web of time. I can't change that.
Right.
And so they get back there, and she goes undercover, working for one of Ramsey's speakeasies.
So she convinces him to go back.
She convinces him to go back in time. Okay. Well, the photograph proves that he was there, so he's willing to go along with it.
Which is funny, because it's almost like you see a photograph and go, well, I guess I have to be there now, you know. That's talk about, you know, advancing your own time stream or knowing too much about
your future. Let's go now. Future. Yeah, I'll get this one over with. So she talks him into it, and he opens up this watchmaker's shop, and it's full of clocks, and it's very Back to the Future feeling because there's just ticking things everywhere. And she goes undercover working for the Ramsey mob at the speakeasy. And Tommy gets out of jail, and first thing he does is he goes to the speakeasy because the report that he gets from Brick is that the numbers are not where they should be, and they're choosing to blame it on this evangelical minister who's moved into the church and is kind of drumming up the turn away from sin and, you know, come support this. Well, he is fed up with the guy that runs the saloon. He's going to just get rid of him, and Sarah kind of pipes up and says, you're making a mistake. You should keep him on. And, of course, at this point, she's a floozy. He has no idea who this woman is. And she says, well, he's got a duplicate set of books, and he keeps the other one in the safe, and he's lying to you, but you should keep him around. Well, he finds out that her claims are true, and he keeps the guy on because knowing that he's scared of him is more valuable than trying to train somebody else how to do the job.
Sure.
So she endears himself to him through that and kind of gets to be part of the inner circle from that point on. The doctor, meanwhile, is falling victim, not really, to a protection racket by the Ramsey mob. He's got people coming into the shop and knocking clocks off shelves and being all, you got to pay your protection money. And he's like, oh, my clumsy dear fellow, you shouldn't have done that. And breaks out the Venusian Aikido on them and wrecks the shop more than they did in their attempt to dispatch them. things progress, and we find out in true typical Doctor Who fashion that there are, in fact, aliens in this book. Unfortunately, they don't show up for a very long time. Because while the book is progressing, I can give you chapter and verse about Tommy Ramsey the gangster and Brick and Jack, the guy who's his second lieutenant who likes to start fires, and a couple of the other mob bosses in the area, and Tommy's mother, and Sarah's relationship to these people. It goes on and on and on and on. It's a very these are well-thought-out characters. They're all mobsters. And I kept closing the book and flipping it back over and looking at the front of it to make sure I was reading a Doctor Who book.
Sounds like David Bishop got really, really involved in
these
mobster
characters.
He got
really involved in his research, I think, is what happened. Yeah. Because he wanted to include all this stuff in there. I mean, it's weird because it's a 282-page book, which is not overly lengthy,
not
even for a Doctor Who book. We complained about some of the other ones that you could have done more with it. Now, this is an older printing, so it's smaller type, but yeah, still, 282 pages is plenty of space to tell an entertaining Doctor Who story. And he's going on and on and on and on and on ad nauseum about these gangsters. So the aliens show up, and it's revealed that they are from a race called the Xin, the Xinian. I don't know. It's got a couple X's and some other unpronounceable characters in it. And they...
it's the ones where when you're reading, you go, that guy.
That guy. Yeah. Note to science fiction writers. Just because it's science fiction doesn't mean that you have to put four Q's, a silent H, and a couple of Z's and an X in this.
It can still be Bob.
It can still be Bob. Or Otto. So... Anyway. You were making a Cyberman bomb joke there, weren't you? I see what you did. So the aliens have shown up, and their kind of thing is they send out a scouting force, the trinumerative. There's three of them, and they kind of intertwine themselves in their thoughts, and they interweave. And there's a very cool play later in the book. The evangelical preacher has been talking to God.
Or so he thinks.
And he's the voice of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. No, he's talking to these three aliens, but he doesn't recognize that for what it is.
Clever.
And I was like, okay, that was kind of cool. Wish you'd have done more with that instead of... And he kept that as like a really big secret until the reveal. And I was like, eh. So these aliens, they're like locusts. They send out the scouting party, and they start slowly interfering with things and getting things to their liking. And then the strike fleet comes in. To obliterate the planet. And they're like locusts. They come in, they devour things, and they move on to the next planet. While they're busy cleaning up and destroying things, they send another scouting party out to another one. Now, here's the interesting wrinkle. They see themselves as religious figures. They're not just going to come in and enslave humanity. They're going to come in and show humanity the true light of how they should be worshiping us.
Okay.
And it was like, okay, that's kind of interesting. Yeah, that's a new slant. Didn't really go anywhere with it. Nothing happened on that front. And the Doctor, of course, gets an audience with them, and he's threatening them and saying, you should leave, and this planet is protected, and I'm here to stop you, and blah, blah, blah. And they're kind of like, well, why? And he's like, well, because, people don't have to worship you. Oh, yes, everyone must worship us. No, they don't. And it was a bunch of finger pointing and name calling. It was not one of the Doctor's finer moments in the grand scheme of threatening an alien to get off this planet or else. So one of the side stories that's kind of going on is this evangelical preacher who's trying to rebuild the Lower East End here. He's got a bread factory, the Bread of Life. And he strikes a deal with one of the police chiefs that they will buy their bread exclusively from this Bread of Life factory and pump money back into the community, and he'll provide all the police stations with these cheap, in effect, loaves of bread. Well, then the aliens reveal that they're the ones behind the bread factory. And it's drug-induced. It's got these hallucinogenics and things in the drugs. So they've got control of the police. And they're forced to elevate their timetables and start, okay, well, let's go ahead and take care of business. And they're pumping this poison into the atmosphere, which is what's creating this killer smog. It's actually part of the alien plot, and we wrote it off as a weird conflux of, meteorological conditions. It's not. It's an alien plot to destroy London. and eventually the world. So the evacuations that are taking place are being done by brainwashed cops, and they're loading people into trucks, and they're driving them to the bread factory, where they're being summarily killed.
Oh.
Now, it's confusing, because the first thought is that they're just executing these people, right. Just unmercifully, just they gassed them in a chamber, and that was it.
Okay.
But then later they make comments that the Exinians, or whatever they're called, are actually performing experiments on them to see what kind of... it's almost like the Sontaran experiment, like what can we do to these humans? That
right.
But all the experiments, they don't go into any of the detail on them. It just involves crowding a bunch of people in a room and gassing them. So
it's like going somewhere that they maybe didn't explore far enough.
Yeah, I don't know if it was a thought that never got deleted. Because I've done that.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, sure.
Hey, I'm going to do this. And then I change my mind and don't do it.
But you don't go back and edit it out.
You don't back. Yeah, I didn't change it. So Sarah and Tommy have kind of become friends, and not necessarily, like, he sees in her somebody that he could love. She sees in him somebody that he could love if he changed. You know?
Right.
Isn't that the story that most of us go through? If you weren't you, I could totally fall for you.
Right.
So set against this huge backdrop, they've got this kind of little interpersonal relationship thing going on, which is kind of fun because it's Sarah Jane... But she's not reduced to shrieking heroin. It's Sarah Jane being Sarah Jane, and that was so refreshing and wonderful
nice.
To see that she didn't care that he was the most feared man in all of London's East End. She didn't put up with his crap, and she called him on it, and she warned him, "Don't do this. You're going to cause this problem." Well, what about this? And then his lieutenants are like, "Boss, you think you should be listening to a woman?" And she turns on them, and he's laughing because it's like she's got more moxie than you do, whatever. And there were a lot of times when the whole mob thing sounded very Chicago, didn't sound like London at all. It sounded like it was, you know.
David Bishop's an American writer, isn't he?
He's actually from. He was born and raised in New Zealand.
Oh, okay.
He immigrated to Britain. According to the About the Author, he immigrated to Britain in 1990 to avoid the Commonwealth Games. I don't know what that means.
What does that mean? Yeah.
Apparently New Zealand has, you know, District 12 submitting tributes. I don't know. The Commonwealth Games. I have no idea. I'm sure it's a joke, but I don't know. I thought he was an American writer, too, but I read that and turns out he was not.
I'll be darned.
So we get to the end of this grand... thing, and the preacher, who's had several encounters with the doctor at this point, has kind of begun to understand that these aren't angels that he's praying to, that they're actually aliens, and he's come to accept that. And he goes down there to stop it, and he finds out that his bread of life is what is enabling them to control the cops, and his church pulpit is what's enabling them to do all this. And oh, by the way, he's an alien. He's one of them. He's gone native. He doesn't know that. He refuses to accept the fact that he is an alien in a human suit. And he's been completely bought into his own cover story that, you know, I'm this and you can't do that and blah, blah, blah. Well, they just blast him and he kind of evaporates into nothingness and the thing blows up and that's it. And you just kind of like, that's the end of his arc. Well, all right, whatever.
Aww.
So then Ramsey and the mob and we're out there and we're fighting. We've got to save the people in the East End. So they're fighting the cops, and we've got everybody loaded for bear, and we go out into the killer smog, and we're shooting cops dead, because that's the way to do it.
Huh.
Yeah. But the cops are so hopped up on these drugs, they don't die.
Oh.
They literally become zombie cops. And the undead are now stalking the mob and forcing them to retreat back into their things. And it was just one of those, really? I mean, it's like a zombie. And then 2 pages later, he used the word zombie to describe them. And I'm like, I can't believe you just went there.
Oh.
There's so many things wrong with what you're doing here in a Doctor Who book. But we've got Doctor Who fighting zombies now. Okay, well, actually, the Doctor's not. He's back at the TARDIS constructing the... You remember I told you I was going to kick you off the planet or else? He's constructing the or else.
Oh, D-Mat gun?
Might as well be. he describes it as a time bomb.
Oh, wow. All right.
And, of course, my first thought is a big black ball with a wick and a red number.
And a big clock,
you know, it's a time bomb. Apparently what it does is it creates a sphere or an area of accelerated time.
A time bubble?
A time bubble. Time within the bubble speeds up. And even though the Xenians are this incredibly long-lived race, millennia will pass within this, and they'll die.
Perish.
They will completely perish.
Wow.
So the final confrontation happens at the church, and the doctor warns them, don't make me use this. And, of course, they start shooting lightning bolts out their hands and blowing things up. And the mob boss is running from room to room with the shotgun trying to get them. And Sarah's down in a corner with Brick trying to, you know, he's trying to keep her down. And she's trying to get to the doctor. And the doctor sets the timer. And in true Doctor Who fashion, it's got a ridiculously long timer. Like, in the middle. I just described this. Flames and fire and lightning bolts and a guy with a shotgun. That's what we've got. And he sets the timer for like 6 minutes. And I'm like, what? Doc, we got to get out Monday. So they barely escape with their lives. Even though there's 5 minutes left on the timer. I don't know. They get out. And then the doctor goes back to try and give them one last chance. And because he doesn't want to use the thing. Because it's an abomination. I mean, he knows this is something the Time Lords would not
sanction. Oh, thank goodness. Because that sounds something... to me, that sounds very Tenth Doctor.
It's very Tenth Doctor.
Because
it's
now
very not Pertwee.
I'm getting into that very dark area... And I don't have the Time Lords to say this isn't a good idea anymore. You know,
he acknowledges that he's loath to use it, and it's not something that he's proud of that he's built. But he uses it anyway.
Oh,
they don't dismantle it. The Xen don't agree to leave, and it goes off, and that's what destroys the church.
Yeah, that doesn't work for me.
And it destroys their spaceship, and it destroys the factory, which is like six blocks over. And the spaceship was underground connecting the two. And all of that gets wiped out in this field, but none of the surrounding neighborhood.
So it's not really a sphere.
Not as originally described.
It's more like a balloon dog. All right, no?
Accelerated time inside a wiener, yeah. It's banana shaped. Remember the banana? Forget the banana. So... yeah, the thing goes off. Oh. And so then he goes back and he's disgruntled and he's dismantling the machine so that it can't be used again. Never mind the fact that he completely cannibalized the entire TARDIS console room to make this. But, you know, so, it's, you know, what, you don't need that piece for that? Okay. You know, just I need it for this more. Okay. There's also some strange little moments. Like, the Doctor was very much portrayed... in many ways as human in this, like in the middle of building this thing, despite the fact that we've got killer aliens, killer mob bosses, and killer smog, and the Doctor's building this to stop all this, he fell asleep in a chair in the console room at one point. And he kind of startled himself awake, like, oh, I haven't done that, I must be getting old. It's like, what?
That's very uncharacteristic.
Very uncharacteristic,
doctor,
especially
because,
Pertwee's Doctor.
How many times did we see Joe or Liz or Sarah... sleeping or resting or something, and he's continually working on some project. I mean,
right.
that happened at least once with each of those companions that I can vaguely remember. So.
And I'm trying to think. I don't remember seeing moments where the Doctor slept unless, A, he was knocked unconscious by whatever's going on.
Right.
B, regeneration. I mean, you know, like David Tennant was certainly out of commission for a bit during Christmas Invasion or that.
Or the Doctor's injured.
Well, if he's injured, which kind of falls under, you know, knocked unconscious.
Well, yeah.
Or Tom Baker being obstinate and going fishing.
Right,
and just,
right.
I'm going to go take a nap,
exactly.
Leave me alone, and wake me in 2 hours.
Right, yeah, absolutely. No, you're right. And then I think that there's been times where he's mentioned that he doesn't require sleep like humans do.
Yeah.
So
I don't, giving him the benefit of the doubt, maybe he'd been working really, really hard all up to this before Sarah dragged him off.
Maybe.
And it finally caught... I don't know. I didn't particularly care for that. So then we get the obligatory scene at the end with the destroyed church, and even though they've completely shattered whatever rapport the Doctor and Tommy Ramsey had built up by something that happens during that end fight, they still manage to shake hands, and he goes off to do this, and
they get their picture.
They get their picture. And then there's this scene at the end where a lone figure stands in front of the church, which even though Tom Z. Ramsey had rebuilt it and returned it to its glory as is his penance for trying to, he's kind of paid back to the neighborhood. It's now fallen into disrepair, and it's kind of, it's present day, and it's kind of, you know, back into being a shambles again. And this figure is standing outside the church wondering if the transmitter in the steeple is still transmitting. Because this apparently a transmitter in the steeple of this church that's transmitting to the Zen fleet, letting them know, come to Earth and invade. And it's the preacher! He's still alive! And he's accepted that he is a Zen now. But he's still native and refusing to do it. And then he turns and walks away into the fog.
Well, I can't...
Now...
That's a neat little...
That would have been neat if... Okay, if you've gone native, wouldn't you stop the transmitter?
Well, yes. Good point.
And he does it. He just wonders if it's still up there and then walks away.
But it's not necessary. I mean, the transmitter is in... consequence of now because it's race a, has been
well,
accelerated
the,
agent
the three
created right? Oh, right,
the
right.
Advanced scouting force
has been
but not, obliterated
well,
but
that,
not that
that leaves Bishop open to come back and do another
I sure hope not group. Wow. Now I struggled mightily through this book. And it was I was excited about it. I got into it. The doctor sounded like the doctor. Sarah sounded like Sarah. Cool. And then it got so bogged down in the gangsters and the everything that was going on, and then these random aliens and things that just didn't work.
Yeah.
And it took me forever to read it. Maybe it's a better book than I'm giving it credit for because it took me so long. And I've used this before, slogging through things. I slogged through this book.
If you had to slog through it, it wasn't written well.
And there were moments that I thoroughly enjoyed. I really liked Brick. He was a great character. I really enjoyed Tommy and his mom and the relationship they had. I just didn't need 282 pages of it.
Yeah.
So I can't give it a glowing review. I'd go so far as to say stay away from that one, which it's kind of like early Big Finish. At this point, I hope there are better books out there because I've been burned a couple times now on the Doctor Who front. And I can't recommend this one.
Well, that's too bad.
I was very pleased to finally get done with it and put it aside so that I could read the other book I got from the library, which is Dirk Gently's Holistic Detective Agency by Douglas Adams.
Yeah.
And I'm up to page 90, and Dirk Gently has finally shown
up. I told you it wouldn't be long. But all right.
That's that.
Then that's too bad because I started, and I think I got about 4.5 chapters, maybe 5 chapters into it, and now maybe I just won't because I wasn't getting into it either, and I got so busy.
If you
I'll maybe put that
don't express an interest in what's happened up to this point,
I don't. Maybe I'll put it in the back burner. Maybe I'll revisit it someday.
No.
I'll forget that you didn't like it,
Let me remind you that I didn't like it.
Well, progressing in chronological order. Well, that's your reminder.
That's me reminding you that I didn't like that one.
Progressing in chronological order of Doctors, I read another Eighth Doctor story, which this is my second book review, and both books have been Eighth Doctors. But there, I'm just rediscovering the Eighth Doctor, and I'm so enjoying him in all forms. The movie I've always loved. I'm loving him in Big Finish, and I am absolutely loving him in novel form. It's just, I think, because Paul McGann has completely cemented in my head what the Eighth Doctor should be like, both of the authors that I've read now, Steve...
Lyons.
Now, yeah, that's correct. Steve Lyons. And now Terrence Dix have both done a very good job of encapsulating the Doctor and having that same character, you know, not deviating from how Paul McGann played it in the movie and plays it in Big Finish. So,
do you think that helps or hinders in that when you come out and you do a Star Trek book or a Doctor Who book or something, and you look back at the body of work of this particular actor in that role that you can pick and choose from to kind of piece together what this is, and sometimes you get books that come out early in the run and the character has grown so much by the time you read this book that it's like, that doesn't sound right.
Yeah.
Or in some cases, the only thing the author had to go off of was the show Bible, where it's described that so-and-so is a headstrong woman character, and that's really all they've got. And so they write it that way, and then the first couple of episodes have come out, and you're like, that's not who that is at all. Does it help that all we've got of McGann is the movie, and so that's kind of what people have to work off of to write it that way? Or does it hurt them that that's all they have to write off
of? It's hard to say for me.
Or is McGann just that good that he hasn't altered him and
left
him?
Well, that's just it. That's what I wonder. That's where I'm going to, because I haven't heard enough of McGann's later stuff. You know, I haven't heard any of his solo stuff that he did for the BBC Four when they, you know, they branched off the mainline and had him do the Eighth Doctor series that he did. I've only heard, you know, most of the early mainline stuff, which would have been shortly after the movie anyway,
right,
and only seen the movie. So from that perspective, if there's only that much of a body of work that you're working from, then, yeah, that fits along those same lines that you're saying. But
it's still
maybe,
new enough. That...
Exactly. But maybe later he does expand on the character where I would, if I had all knowledge of all of his work and then went back and started reading some of this, maybe I couldn't compare. So I don't know. But so far, and this is even, I think, a different beast, because I think this book was written, this was released in 1997. So this would have been on the heels
of the movie.
So there was no big finish
yet. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, this is the first...
This is the first Eighth Doctor media of any sort.
It's the first one in the new
line.
It is the first one in the new line.
Yes, absolutely.
That wasn't a Virgin New Adventure.
This was after Doctor Who. This is when BBC relaunched the novel series, and this was the first one that they went to.
Okay.
And which appropriately features all Eight Doctors up to that point. The cover blurb is... Recuperating after the trauma of his recent regeneration, the Doctor fails foul of a final booby trap set by his arch enemy, the Master. When he recovers, the disoriented Doctor looks in a mirror and sees the face of a stranger. He knows only that he is called the Doctor, nothing more. But something deep inside tells him to trust the TARDIS, and his hands move over the console on their own accord. The TARDIS takes him to a strangely familiar junkyard in the late 90s London, where he is flung into a confrontation between local drug dealers and Samantha Jones, a rebellious teenager from Coal Hill High School. But the Doctor soon finds the TARDIS transporting him to various other places in order to recover all his memories, and that involves seeing seven strangely familiar faces.
Ooh.
Yeah. This
so now is Sam Jones the companion?
Sam,
for this?
Well, or, here I'll get to
okay,
that
get
because
to that.
I think Sam Jones becomes a companion in later novels because I haven't read a lot of the New Adventures, and so I don't know. She isn't by the time we get to the last one that I reviewed, which is Crooked World. It's another pair of companions,
right.
But this sort of sets up her to be the new companion for at least his early adventures in the new series. So, and this starts off exactly as it says. The Master has set one final booby trap in the Eye of Harmony in the cloister room. Well, and they're not the same. We just
the cloister room is the Eye of Harmony is in the cloister.
Yeah,
room.
Okay, that's
there.
The,
you go.
Then that's the impression. So the Eye of Harmony. There has been one last booby trap set by the Master, and it renders the Doctor basically with amnesia. And that's what happens. He goes in, and he's familiar enough that he just has a... That's the nice thing about this is that it plays the TARDIS up as an entity in this. Not so much that it's another character, but it's enough of it. Yeah, it's a living, breathing entity that it knows that it can put the Doctor on the right path to recover his memories. And that's what's really neat about this, especially in hindsight now of having seen the Doctor's wife and getting a lot more
right.
of the TARDIS's personality. Which I don't think the classics... You know, he always treated the TARDIS in the classic series as an entity, but you never got that impression that it was more than just a spaceship with maybe a little bit of a heart to it. You know
well,
what I mean?
Well, I think it was the Five Doctors when he says, well, the TARDIS is more than just a machine, Tegan. I mean, and he's talked about hurting its feelings,
and those little hints, little nods. But I think
this
book solidifies this. And this book is written by Terrence Dix, who, you know, has a wealth of knowledge in Doctor Who. And truthfully,
does he?
Well, a little bit.
He hasn't done anything for Doctor Who, has he?
He hasn't been with the series that much. But no, rightfully so. If you're going to do an Eighth Doctor's novel, that's whose hands you put it in.
Yeah.
Now, that being said, this novel plays lots of fan service. that's really all this is really just fan, what they call fan wank. there is a lot of that. And if you're new to Doctor Who, this isn't the novel to start with. Because, well, as I get along here, you'll understand why. First place that he sets down, of course, is in the TARDIS brings him to, as we said, Foreman's junkyard. He does, unfortunately, get set down in the middle of a drug deal. It's not real important for our story other than it's sort of a bookend thing because we'll end up here at the end. But he ends up in a drug deal gone wrong. He ends up helping Samantha because she has been – she's turned into sort of a snitch for this gang in the 90s. And she's trying to warn them, you know, away from selling at this school. The gang has always sold drugs. They've always sold outside of the school, but they've kind of come into the realm of the school. And she's kind of turned snitch on them so that they don't necessarily get kids involved in it.
Right.
The doctor stumbles into this confrontation between the gang and Samantha in Foreman's junkyard and arrives just kind of at the wrong time. Pulls out the Venetian,
Venusian Ikito,
just out of instinct, which is very cool because he doesn't know that he can do it. But as they attack, it just happens, and that's really kind of cool. But unfortunately, they drop the bag, scurry off as the police show up, as the doctor bends down and picks up the bag. And so suddenly he falls into this. They believe that he might be the new pusher in the area that they've been hearing about. is detained for a short time, but
when are you going to learn not to stand over
exactly,
the dead body?
Exactly. But in turn, escapes, gets in the TARDIS, and the TARDIS takes him back to his first encounter with the first Doctor. Takes him back to the year, the Paleolithic jungle, which is the one that we visit in the first series. Not the empty child. Help me.
Oh,
the
first unearthly child.
Unearthly child.
It's, oh,
yeah.
It's the cave people.
It is the cave people.
Ah, cool.
And what happens is, I'll set this up early, is any time that he interacts with his previous self, a stasis bubble forms. And so everything around them freezes. So he's able to communicate and talk to this incarnation of particular incarnation of the Doctor that he visits each time without anybody else really seeing what's happening or knowing or being aware of what's happening.
So it gives him the option to drop into existing stories.
That's what's
changing.
Neat about this
them.
Is that everything that happens from here on out is within, well, for the most part, is within the continuity of Classic Who televised adventures. Which is fantastic. So he shows up with the first Doctor at about the time that he's about to brain a certain certain caveman. remember that controversial scene where and Ian's the one that interrupts him? Well, it's actually this book puts forth that it's the Eighth Doctor that sort of persuades him not to being to be a murderer, essentially.
Right.
In that contact, he really, again, it's fan service. There's not a lot here that drives the plot of the book other than pieces of his memory are coming back as he interacts with his former selves. And because of that psychic ability, that psychic link, the dumbed-down version of the contact, when these stasis bubbles happens, all of these memories start to flood back into him. So at this point, the Eighth Doctor now remembers everything that the First Doctor has done up to this point. So he remembers that he has a granddaughter. He remembers Ian and Barbara at this point. He remembers and certain things even between his first and second incarnation become a little clearer, not necessarily everything between the two. But that's where he encounters First Doctor is at this point in the Paleolithic period. Gets back in the TARDIS and goes on. The TARDIS takes him then to a battlefield in what appears to be ancient Rome. However, when he encounters this Roman legion, he goes and pretends to be he presents him as a observer, a battlefield observer for the Romans, which is something I think was common for the Romans back in the time. They had people that came from Caesar And they essentially said, you know, they would come and observe. They were messengers. They would come find out what was going on. They might even direct the battle one way or deliver messages from Caesar saying, this is where we want to take this or something. So he pretends to be that certain person. And from this centurion, he finds out that they've been having these, like, battles that just continue to go on and on and on. And they don't know, you know, what they're really supposed to be doing next. But they seem to be winning, but then they have this kind of reversal where they're not, and then they are. But there's also this mysterious mist to the outside of the battlefield. Yes. So the doctor
field
then,
goal.
Yeah. So the doctor then starts to sort of put things together and remember and or realize that this mist might be the linking connection as to why this is happening to this particular group of centurions. So at some point he travels through, gets to the base in War Games where these, you know, the TARDISes were taking them back and forth from the one zone to the other. He gets in there. He ends up encountering the second Doctor in his incarnation of the second Doctor during the encounter where he was pretending to be working for the War Chief. And the others
talking
were turning
to the scientist
on him.
And
yeah,
all that.
And
okay.
So he ends up encountering him there, gaining his memories there. Again, no reason for connection between these other than the fact that we're getting to relive these moments in Classic Who, which I'm perfectly fine with at this point.
Yeah.
So after he...
And thank goodness that you'd seen these episodes.
That was the neat thing is it was almost serendipity. I mean, I had seen Unearthly Child, but it had been so long ago. But we've reviewed that since we've started doing our podcast.
Right.
War Greens Games was just weeks before I started reading this book. So that was wonderful. All right, so we get in the TARDIS. It gets back down to Earth, or back down to supposed Earth. Gets back down, leaves, gets in the TARDIS. TARDIS takes him to his next encounter, which we don't get the Eighth Doctor right away. We skirt off to another story of a certain villain who has just escaped from the Third Doctor and Joe Grant in a hovercraft. And we find out that the... Master has encountered a person on a road, has hypnotized him, taken his vehicle back to, which this is unfortunately something we haven't reviewed yet, but back to, I can't remember the town's name, but it's the town in the demons where he was pretending to be a preacher.
The monkey.
Yeah, exactly. And so he goes there, and the Third Doctor is getting reports at Unit HQ of this man that has absconded with a vehicle and is headed to this location. So the Third Doctor goes there to meet him. And
that is the demons. Is it the next story after Seagulls?
The demons is actually a story before that, because what has happened is that's when he gets caught, is in the demons. And that's why he's serving in that prison in the Sea Devils. You remember the castle,
right,
that they've got him caught in? Well, when he escapes, he goes back there. The reason he goes back there, guess what the altar was in the church of the demons?
His TARDIS.
It was his TARDIS.
Ah,
so
cool.
He goes back,
okay,
there to escape. But he materializes in the doctor's... he goes to confront... The doctor goes there and confronts him, but he's too late. He takes off. He escapes. But for some reason, the master comes to confront him. No, he doesn't. I take that back. He just escapes at that point because we're revisited by the master's story later. But the doctor and Joe, having been thwarted again and the master escapes, go back to the headquarters, Unit HQ. And when they get there, the doctor's eighth doctor is already there. And he's already been talking to the brigadier. And the brigadier is like, there's something familiar about you. I seem like I know you type thing, which is fantastic. And the Third Doctor comes
that's
in.
That's fanboy right,
yes,
there.
Exactly.
Paul McGann and the Brig.
Exactly.
So,
and
know,
that was the
that
nice
moment.
Thing is it's that moment for the Eighth Doctor to be able to, you know, which they revisited and did later in the Big Finish audio line, obviously, and Keith's favorite, Minnie Wayne Hill. But and then Spectre of Lenny Mord as well. But was that? No, that wasn't a...
No,
that was
the
Sixth Doctor.
That
yeah, that's
Colin.
The well. The Sixth Doctor got... Yeah, that's right. That's where his quasi-official was, because we don't count dimensions in time. But anyway, so...
yeah,
so
we finish far before I count dimensions in time.
So we get that nice little... But he doesn't know that the Eighth Doctor is the Doctor, and that's never really divulged to the Brigadier, which kind of is a nice thing as well. But when the Third Doctor comes in, he kind of syncs up and realizes what's going on. The Third Doctor gets his memories. But the interesting thing about this encounter is the Third Doctor says, well, I'll walk you to your TARDIS, which is outside of, you know, the Pertwee's TARDIS, or the third Doctor's TARDIS, is in the
right,
HQ.
It's in the lab.
His is out. So as they go to the the Doctor at some point, I've skipped, has recovered the that's what it was. The Master does materialize in the HQ. There's a struggle between that the Eighth and the Third Doctor have to utilize in order to thwart the Master. In that context, he gets the cell regenerator that, or not regenerator, degenerator that shrinks people.
I can't matter remember. Disruptor.
Matter disruptor.
Is that what it's called? Yeah.
He gets the matter disruptor from him. The Master does end up escaping again. So he gets away at that point. But the third Doctor has the matter disruptor. But as he walks the Eighth Doctor to his TARDIS, he stops him just before he goes and he pulls the matter disruptor on him. And he says, you know, I've been trapped here for so long. I haven't been able to get my TARDIS going. He's really lamenting having to be stuck there. And the Eighth Doctor says, you really wouldn't use that on me because, number one, that would destroy our timeline. You know that your place is here. So the Third Doctor almost hijacks the Eighth Doctor's TARDIS just to get away from his exile. That's how much he wants to get off of Earth, how much this exile is affecting him. And, of course, the Third Doctor says, no, you know, you're right. I would never do that. And the Eighth Doctor then goes on. So it's a nice little moment there because there's a little bit of that tension about, well, the Third Doctor is almost desperate enough to utilize something that a weapon of the Master's in order to take a TARDIS that would give him a release from Earth. But he does come back and say, yeah, on the side of, you're absolutely right. I could not do something like that. So it kind of gives the Third Doctor a bit of a dark edge, which I thought was kind of cool. But on the flip side of that, still, you know, redeems him for the fact that, yeah, it's not something that I could do. I need to serve out my time. There's a reason why I'm here.
Yeah, it's not like building a time bomb.
Exactly, right. So, that being said, then he gets in the TARDIS and he comes across – this is where I'm – oh, that's right. He comes across the Fourth Doctor and Romana on the planet where the – in State of Decay – where the vampires are.
Okay.
And it's shortly after Romana and the Fourth Doctor have dispatched of the giant vampire. You
the
know,
great
that's down,
vampire.
Yeah, the great vampire. And they are back at the renegades that were in the one cottage that were, not mercenaries, but the rebels.
The rebels.
Essentially. They're back there, and the Doctor is Romana is asked to come outside, and when she is, she's kidnapped by one of the vampires that was not killed and is brought back, and she's captured. And so as the Fourth Doctor is on his way to help her, the Eighth Doctor materializes, and they end up helping – he ends up helping each other, so they end up helping to get Romana back from the vampire and dispatch of the vampire one more time.
So there's a whole little extra end scene.
There is an extra
basically.
End scene essentially to that, as we sort of got to the Sea Devils as well, where the Master Escapes comes back. So that was kind of a neat thing as well. He goes off, encounters the. So this is the wonderful thing about this is the Eighth Doctor encounters the Fifth Doctor, Tegan, and Turlough. As they have returned to the Eye of Orion, where they were previously in the Five Doctors, because the Fifth Doctor decided that they really didn't get enough time there to appreciate this wonderful, harmonious planet where, you know, it always smells like rain and all of that. And so they've come back there. Well, what has happened is now throughout the course of this, which I should have been saying, is the Lord President and the Celestial Intervention Agency have been monitoring the Eighth Doctor's time stream and realizing that there's a discrepancy in his time stream and that he's actually going back and revisiting incarnations themselves. So they've been keeping a very close eye on him to find out what's going on here. And what happens is there's somebody in the CIA that wants the Doctor basically gone, and he realizes that this is a way to do it. And so what happens is in such a random, strange story that there's somebody in the CIA that's wanting to get rid of the Doctor, decides to unleash a the Rastan warrior robot.
What?
Yeah, so they pluck him out of the dark, not the dark zone, the
death zone.
Death zone. I always say dark zone. The death zone, place him on this planet. But fortunately, what happens is a, and I don't remember exactly why, but a Cybermen squad ends up coming as they're trapped, essentially, by this Rastan robot, you know, cowering behind the ruins because, well, a cyber squad comes and ends up having this battle with the Rastan warrior. So it was a wonderful way for Terrence Dix to go, you know, I'm not done with the Rastan warrior robot. He brings it back in. And this Rastan warrior robot ends up taking out this entire squad with the exception of the cyber commander that ends up defeating the thing, which is undefeatable. It's a robot that's undefeatable and ends up defeating it. And is so very proud, and the doctor is actually in a moment congratulating the Cyberman, who is on its death. It's on its deathbed. It's dying, but it has completely just destructed it.
Because it wasn't enough to watch this thing destroy
a
squad of Cybermen in the first time around in the movie, in the Five Doctors. We've got to come back and
let
it do it again.
And I should mention that the CIA agent that is in there is using a time scoop. Actually, I think there are two of them that are conspiring to do this. Use the time scoop that, the Lord President Barusa was using to, you know, take the doctors out of their time stream. That's what they used to put the Rastan robot on this.
Eye
of Orion.
I never. We only used it one way to take from and bring here, but it makes total sense that you could move other things around as well.
Right, exactly.
It wasn't Coordinator Vansel by any chance, was it?
That seems familiar, but I'm not sure it was.
Well,
it's President Flavia who is the
acting president at the time,
and she's the one that has been observing the timeline being. It's Ryloth.
Nope, doesn't sound familiar.
Locates the fifth eye. Yeah, it's Ryloth is the one that's. In fact, he's the one that has brought this discrepancy to Flavia's attention that this is going on, and I think that this is in his way. A way to say, "Hey, the doctor is doing something he's not supposed to be doing." So
he's
all this time,
he's
trying to get the doctor in trouble, and when that's not working, then he goes to further measures.
So now, just as a side note, you said this is published 1997.
Yes.
Uh-huh. So for all of the big finish that we get that involves the CIA and the Celestial Intervention Agency, that pretty much all comes from here, then. This would be the first reference of it, wouldn't
it? Well, no, because I think we had CIA... maybe, because it seems like... Yeah, I think the CIA was... I want to say that there was CIA involvement or creation in the Virgin New Adventures. I'm not sure, because I'm not familiar enough. But I want to say that they'd been around longer than the New Adventures.
Okay. Well, I'll look. We'll do some research on that.
We should find out.
I was trying to figure, because I thought when I first heard CIA, the first time I heard it was in the Eighth Doctor Adventures, the late Eighth Doctor standalone adventures that Big Finish did, and I thought that was wonderful. And then we keep getting these little drops of them throughout the Big Finish that we've been listening to. So it's like,
they've just kind
of carried this over.
Yeah,
and how
which clever. I think they have
the CIA Celestial Intervention,
but the CIA has also been recently pointed to as an excuse for how the Second Doctor is able to materialize, because in fact they say that the reason he is sent by the Time Lords to help the Sixth Doctor is not necessarily because he's sent by the Time Lords, because he has been sent by the CIA without really the High Council's knowledge of what's going on. So
it's a convenient
convenient retcon is exactly.
Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Continue.
No, that's fine, because I'm a little fuzzy and I can't remember what it is. The Eighth Doctor actually confuse the Rastan robot before the Cybermen show up, because they walk up and the Rastan robot is intelligent enough to realize that they can actually walk up to it, because they use an old Time Lord trick, as they're saying, where they're because their brain patterns are the same, they're canceling each other out as they walk
together so the Rastan, they can move up on the Rastan robot and confuse it, because he's not quite sure if he's seeing double or if there's two of them there. So it's a nice little phase that distracts him, and that's what allows the one Cyberman to end up dispatching him. But the funny thing about this is, and it's such a little moment in this book, but it's a lot of fun, is being frustrated by what's happening, Ryloth actually sends a Drashig after them. So he sends it with a time scoop through this zone. But the doctors have created this they've used the TARDIS in order to create a temporal disruption. And what happens is the Drashig flies in to being dispatched by Ryloth, but goes through this temporal destruction and ends up back where it came from and eats Ryloth. So that's all it is. And it's such a wonderful moment just to get a Drashig in there, because the Drashigs are like these big, you know, worm-looking, dog-faced creatures that, you know, are just kind of these little classic pieces of Who that you don't get to see a lot. But I've always been intrigued by them. So when you get this moment where this Drashig comes in and then is suddenly sent back and ends up eating the guy that... And that's it. That's all we get for Ryloth. That's what's so wonderful. However, the nice thing about that is then the doctor goes to meet his sixth incarnation, and I am so glad that Keith is not here, because this time it's shortly after the sixth doctor's trial, which has been taking place not on Gallifrey, and I didn't remember this because it'd been long enough ago to see that the trial is not taking place on Gallifrey. It's taking place on a satellite station outside of Gallifrey. Outside on a space station,
right.
Outside, which I sort of remembered that after this would jog my memory. But it happens shortly after he's about to be executed. And as they take him out, they've found him guilty. They take him out in the hallway, and they're getting ready to as they're getting ready to execute him, the eighth doctor shows up, temporal bubble starts, and he says, "There's something wrong here. This isn't the way this was supposed to play out." And so he takes him into the TARDIS, takes him down to Gallifrey, and they discover throughout the course of them being on Gallifrey, they kind of go back in time. So the Sixth Doctor still has a version of himself up here, now still on trial again, while he and the Sixth Doctor start to uncover the mystery of why this is happening. And it's not all of the Masters doing up here. The CIA have set this up, and the reason why it has been put up here away is so that the most of the High Council don't even know that it's going on. So it really kind of explains why this is happening in kind of this pocket area, while they end up finding Flavia, who's not up here.
Right, in Flavia wasn't up there.
Or Flavia, not Flavia. Flavia, that's not really good. Flavia, who's not up here, they find her and say, we've got something going on here that's hokey and something's not right. Well, come to find out, there are people in the CIA that was trying to set this up, and that's the reason why a lot of this was manipulated. But what happens is the Master comes in and is able to access the Matrix and manipulate things in his own way. So he's got something going on outside of what the CIA is trying to set up. And anyway, they end up clearing his name on the planet, which then, in a way, they're able to get a message to change the events, because that's how we find out that the Master has actually been manipulating things, because the Master is not revealed in this alternate timeline. But because the Eighth Doctor intervened, the Master is revealed. And so the events happen as they were intended, as we see them on TV, and the Sixth Doctor is spared. Which was kind of a neat little, this is going on the planet while this is going on. And the neat thing is, this incarnation of the Sixth Doctor vanishes, because the Sixth Doctor, the real timeline, or the timeline as we know it,
is restored.
Is restored, or maybe is altered. That's the neat thing about, I'm probably explaining this terribly wrong, but because of the events that the Eighth Doctor stepped in, it's the reason why we have the events for the Sixth Doctor that happened in the first place. So it's kind of a cause and effect thing, or an effect and cause thing that has happened here because the Eighth Doctor has intervened.
Okay, so now spoilers for anybody who hasn't seen...
Absolutely, I apologize for anything that we're...
Well, I'm going to go one step further. I'm glad that Keith's not here. Keith, if you happen to be listening to this podcast...
Stop!
Earmuffs! So... If we were to take this as gospel for the events of Trial of a Time Lord, that means that we have the Sixth Doctor being assisted by the Eighth Doctor while on trial by the Valyard.
Yeah, Valyard, yes.
Who is a...
Oh, that was the other thing that I'm missing here. Yeah, exactly. No, that's the nice thing is that they that is revealed ultimately as well, is that the Valyard is this incarnation of the Doctor in the future, and that's never revealed in the alternate timeline, but that ends up becoming revealed based on what is set up in
so
this
there
as well.
Three.
There are three Doctors happening at this time. Yes,
I got to read this book.
I had forgotten about that. I'm glad you said Valyard, because that is another thing that is revealed in this.
Well, quite honestly, that's the one thing I remember from Trial of the Time Lord.
Right,
that's
right.
The only
that's
thing
kind
I
of the big thing.
That and the space station
never,
was about it.
And then we don't go anywhere from that beyond.
I know.
So, yeah, I'm hoping someday they'll revisit that. And
oh,
that.
Moffat's got plans.
But this sort of this was, I think, Terrence Dick's way of sort of smoothing it over. And in fact, I think the Valyard is revisited in the Big Finish line as well.
I believe.
Yeah.
So
that might be something that sort of helps and fix things in it.
Does this kind of help tie into the why Mel and Perrier.
It does not.
It does not.
No,
okay.
It doesn't. Unfortunately, that's not fixed. In,
not
I think
a, not
that's fixed
things.
Later in Big Finish.
I think
well.
I think
yeah.
that's why the yeah. Okay.
So,
go ahead.
Now, this last encounter, which is with the Seventh Doctor, unfortunately, from what I remember, is nothing that was ever televised. This was something where they finally stepped out of the realm of anything on televised adventure. The Doctor is simply on Metabellus 3 and is being
Planet of the Giant Spiders.
Yes,
and
is
blue
being
crystals.
Yes, and is being essentially he's been trapped by one of the giant spiders, and the Eighth Doctor simply gets him out of that entrapment and helps him escape. And that's really all it is. that's all there is to it, which is kind of sad because it's sad. I mean, it doesn't work very well. But
after blowing his mind writing the Trial of the Time Lord segment, he kind of was like, I got nothing. Spiders. Okay.
And I'm reading here because this is where I can't remember exactly what happens. Because at one point he returns to Gallifrey. He confronts Rassilon. And because he believes that Rassilon has been the one that's been guiding this, ultimately his journey to restore his memory, which... Rassilon does reveal in the tomb does reveal to him that he has had a hand in it, and that there are certain loose ends of his history that needed to be tied up. Hence the I did a bad job of explaining those, but because changing the Doctor's mind as the First Doctor incarnation bringing the caveman. I don't remember exactly what happened in the confrontation with the Second Doctor that was sort of the along the same lines of, I believe he is the one. He's the one that tells the Second Doctor that he needs to send a message to the Time Lords, the box. Remember that?
Right.
Okay, that's what that was. The Third Doctor, he is the reason why he has to... he realizes his mission, part of his lot in life is to be trapped on Earth, but he obviously, by encountering his eighth incarnation, who is now traveling in the TARDIS again, he's not stuck here for good. You know, so it's kind of a hope for him. And the Fifth Doctor was just ultimately a way to keep him from being dispatched by the Rassilon. I don't remember what the fourth one was. Obviously, the sixth one was to fix the trial, the issues in trial. So Rassilon... sort of as this god being, has been guiding the TARDIS, essentially, to these locations so that he could fix these little loose ends throughout his life that I think that maybe Terrence Dix felt was needed some tidying in the classic series, which I thought was also clever as well.
Very, very much so.
Ends up back at Foreman's junkyard, saves Sam, who was ultimately going to re-encounter the gang again, and she ends up in the TARDIS with him taking off. So
she becomes a companion.
She becomes a companion, I believe, because again, she's leaving with him. If I recall that right, she leaves with him in the TARDIS to go off on adventures with him. So that sets that up. Another thing that happens, though, is we get this little aside.
The priest is still alive.
The master, who this is before what has happened in the events. In fact, he might have been on Metabellius 3 at this time. But Terrence Dix, for some reason, felt like he needed a reason why the little worm essence thing. What happens is there's this little confrontation. The master goes, and this is after he has escaped from the third doctor.
And Joe.
Well, no, this, it wouldn't have been that because there was enough between. Anyway, some incarnation of the third master is on this planet with this indigenous tribe, and they're going through this like ritual, and they talk about the black worm, and if you swallow the black worm, it allows you to cheat death. And so he goes through this ritual to swallow this basically black essence, and that's the explanation for how when he is, you know, basically reduced to ashes, this still reserves his conscience and his essence, and he's able to transfer himself to another body. Just a nice little, I'm going to drop this in there to tell you this is how this happened.
Because I'm not done tying things
exactly.
up.
Exactly, and so that's what it was. And it really, the whole book, it's a lot of fun. It's there are moments where you're going, okay, this is kind of unusual, this is kind of weird, but you're having so much fun as a fan, reliving and revisiting all of these different things that are televised. I mean, these aren't we aren't plucking these out of, you know, our mind and saying this is, you know, from here and making up planets. We're actually taking events throughout the universe that Terrence Dix just felt like needed to be cleaned up a little bit, and doing it all within the confines of this one book. And for even though I have completely given away the entire story, I would encourage anybody that's a fan to read it again, because you'll glean a lot out of it, and it's so much fun. And I totally praise this book as, for fan content, it's a 10. For story writing and for the style of story it is, it's not written real well, but I don't think Terrence Dix is a novel writer. I think that he's able to tell a good story. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And it is a good story, and it's enjoyable, and it's fun, and there are a lot of fan moments. Because there's times with, like, the confrontation in the schoolyard. There's times with the master's escape where it's kind of dry, and it's like, okay, this happened. So
he's moving the pieces around in order to get to where he needs
exactly.
to be.
Exactly. Yeah. And so it's really kind of it's loose there as far as the story goes. But he puts you in such situations that you have so much fun, and so the payoff is all of these little, you know, bumps in the roller coaster ride, and then getting to the one moment where we realize that Rassilon has actually been putting things together, and it's a blast.
Is Rassilon portrayed then as still kind of ambiguous?
A little bit. That's the nice thing.
He's not quite the good god.
Right, exactly. Okay. But it's more of the... It still treats it in such an... ambiguity that almost like the opposite of being maybe this, the darkness in him, but more of still overlording or overlooking the Time Lords and how they're running things. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So maybe still trying to have a heavy hand in what's going on in Time Lord society and using the Doctor in sort of a puppet way in order to fix certain things. So.
Okay. So now as you went through this, Were all of the individual doctors written correctly? I mean, was the voice there?
I think the beauty of having Terrence Dix write such a large doctor story, I mean, eight doctors. We never had the eight doctors together in one piece up to this point. You can tell that Terrence Dix is still the script editor, still the fan of Doctor Who, still has his finger on the pulse of Doctor Who, even this many years later, and we've been through the wilderness years at this point, or at least half the wilderness years. Terrence Dix was definitely the right person to get to write this, because he does. He tackles each doctor and handles them respectfully, and each time that one of those incarnations of the doctor came on, it was definitely the embodiment of William Hartnell, Patrick Troughton, John Pertwee, Tom Baker, Peter Davison, Colin Baker, and then Sylvester McCoy. So he definitely had a handle on those characters, and that's what made it, again, so much fan service in this book, because even though the story can get dry at times, he does it right. He really knows his Doctor Who, and it's very evident by this novel.
Awesome. Yeah. I'm jazzed. I can't wait to read it. It's kind of one of those that's always been on my list. You know, as soon as I saw it, The Eight Doctors, Terrence Dix. I mean, because, again, I've read dozens of Doctor Who books, but they've all been the novelizations.
Right, right.
And Terrence Dix was responsible for a ton of those.
You've already known, yes, yeah.
And for the most part, he didn't. I mean, there were little changes made here and there, little ads or something. But for the most part, I've already seen this.
Right.
But I just never bought it for some reason. I just never did. And I'm kicking myself now that you've told me it's out of print and it's $1 billion.
I have seen that it's absorbent values on eBay right now because it is out of print.
Well, I'm definitely going to have to keep haunting the used bookstores and different places to see if I can procure a copy. But
absolutely. I was able to fortunately get a digital copy of it, or there would have been no way for me to review it because it's a very expensive book right now. So, well, that's all I've got to say about that.
That's everything, right?
I probably ruined more of the book for you than you wanted to know. But
Well, no, I don't think so. I think we do book reviews, and I mean, we kind of did this last time where we went way into plot developments and this is how it ends and things like that. But I think with a podcast of our nature, I think you kind of come to expect that because we're reviewing things that have already been out. And maybe not. Maybe we need to tell people, hey, we're doing book reviews, and that means we're going to spoil the ending.
I think I did throw the spoiler reviews up beforehand. But the one thing that I think I find us doing is when we watch episodes that we all watch together, we know the story well enough that we just kind of hit on the things we like and didn't like about something. Unfortunately, when we do the book reviews, it's an individual basis.
Right.
So we feel compelled to have to fill each other in on the story and the listener in on the story. And I don't expect our listeners to have gone and done their research on these books as well. So I think that that kind of excuses us to divulge a lot of the plot. And, unfortunately, that does mean giving away a lot of the plot points of it, but we get so passionate about the stories. I think that's what happens.
Yeah. Well, and I think as with some books, you know, Chrissy asking about The Dark Tower or something and going, you have to read it. It's this kind of blah 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 thing.
Right.
That's one thing. And versus there's a billion Doctor Who books out there. And if I really found one that I was passionate about that was so phenomenally good, I might just say you have to read it.
Right, leave it at that. Sure.
But I think for our purposes, you're not hurting my feelings that I know the end.
Oh, terrific.
I mean,
because now you know the end.
you know what?
I didn't give away the secret ending to the Steve Lyons Crooked World because I do want you to come.
Oh, that's
I do
true.
Want
you
to come to the realization of what that is.
You didn't.
I gave the majority of the story.
You gave the majority
book,
of the story away.
But I did hold off on that because it was an interesting twist.
Well, here's an example. Friday Night Who next week. We're doing The Greatest Show in the Galaxy. I know the ending to that one. But I'm going to watch it again anyway.
Of course you are. Good segue, Sean.
Thanks.
What else are we doing next week?
Well, Friday Night Who next week, Greatest Show in the Galaxy, Sylvester McCoy, which just released this week here in North America. So it's a relatively new one.
Well, as we record now, it's Monday. So
well, as it's Monday
last week.
So it's last week. But and, of course, we've discovered that not only is Sophie Aldred but Sylvester McCoy are both now on Twitter.
Right.
Which at Sylvester McCoy.
We mentioned last week, and I forgot to put that in the show notes.
Oh, well, so you can do
it this week. I will do that this week.
Make a note. So hopefully we can get one or both of them to join us. It's always the hope. Never happens.
Never does, but we keep trying.
But we keep trying. And then a certain third leg of our stool will be – that sounded wrong, didn't it? Of our podcast will be back next week. Keith will be back from his honeymoon. And because we know everybody deeply cares, we'll be talking about The Greatest Show in the Galaxy.
Our galaxy, anyway.
Keith and Sarah's wedding. Which was a lot of fun, and we'll give you all that. We didn't want to go into too much this time out, just because it's his story to tell, you know. So we'll cover both. We'll cover the wedding and the actual story, The Greatest Show in the Galaxy. Beyond that, we don't know yet, because there's no set date.
Still up in the air now. Our schedule really is contingent on a release date. So BBC or BBC America, if you could just get on that and let us know when you're going to start, showing it.
I will throw this out there that if we go with the first. And as we've discussed previously, if you're kind of new to the podcast, our kind of golden rule is once it's aired, it's fair game to
once
talk
it's aired
about.
In the UK is
so,
fair game.
If the UK winds up getting this before North America, we will make the executive decision to go ahead and record podcasts and review those episodes before they're available in North America.
So be prepared to.
So you may have
wait
to,
a week.
You may have to postpone us. You may have to listen to the news and the feedback and then stop.
Yeah.
Or even the news, because sometimes the feedback is about last week's.
Right.
You know,
that's
so.
True. That's true. That happens too.
But if that happens, I can tell you the plan as of right now is that we will do Day of the Daleks for Friday Night Who on August 31st. And then our next episode will be a Dalek Archive. We'll do Day of the Daleks and the brand new just released Asylum of the Daleks, the first episode of Season 7. If it's not, and it's delayed, well, I'll have to come up with something to fill in that
gap,
won't we?
For that week,
I'm going to go ahead and do. I'm going to do this. I'll say if it's delayed, we'll do the Visitation.
Oh, okay. Okay.
With Peter Davidson,
good.
We'll just
okay.
bump that part up to the schedule.
Sure. You have that one?
Maybe I shouldn't do that. Let me look.
We could do the Demons. The Demons.
I've had three in a row.
Oh wait, did I buy the Visitation? No, I bought Image of the Fendal.
We don't own it.
Want to do Image of the Fendal? Or Visitation? Or no, wait. Not Visitation. The Daemons?
I don't want to do the Daemons because it'd be three per tweets in a row.
Oh, that's right.
According to the schedule as is. I'll just throw it out there. We'll do the Visitation.
We'll do the Visitation. We'll figure out a way.
We'll figure out a way to make I think the library might have that one. So if nothing else, we'll get a copy of it. But so we'll do one or the other. Universe A.
Universe A. If it's string theory,
if it's this future, we'll do Day of the Daleks and Asylum of the Daleks. If it's not, we'll do Universe B, which is the Visitation, and then we'll do a show all about the Sonic Screwdriver, and that'll be filler.
There you go.
It'll be our filler episode while we wait for a new series.
Hey, that
to come
sounds
out.
Like fun. Actually, doing a whole episode on the Sonic Screwdriver.
That's the plan.
I like
so,
it. Let's do it. All right.
It's time to talk about the Get Out of Jail Free card.
Sweet.
And it'll either happen before Series 7 starts or after, but it's
right,
coming.
Right. All right.
Well, so for all of you going at home, sitting, going, how come Sean hasn't updated the website? I'm waiting for somebody to make a decision. My schedule's ready. Theirs apparently is not.
Right.
They've got Top Gear or something that they're concerned about.
Copper
I don't.
On a baby CMA.
Yeah, I've got this. So,
all right.
It'll be one of the two. But that's still 2 weeks off. Next week, Greatest Show in the Galaxy, Keith's Wedding.
Right.
So there we go. Anything else?
I don't think so. So, in that case, let's wrap this up. Until next week. This sounds really. It seems really weird. It's like
seems
a,
really
just,
weird.
Just drop it off here. All right. Well, until
I've got
next
beer in my fridge for anybody who wants to come over.
Come on over. Until next week. I'm Glenn.
I'm Sean.
And that's weird too. Yeah. Cheers.
Good night, everybody. Oh no, we can't stop here. You got to talk about this.
Oh, yeah. Okay, well, I thought I'd talk about that, though, when we talk about The Greatest Show in the Galaxy, because it was sort of kind of...
Okay, we'll wait.
So.
All right.
Sorry, you'll have to wait one more week.
Spoilers, sweetie.
Until next week, I'm Glenn.
I'm Sean.
Cheers.
Good night, everyone.
Be
seeing ya. Ya.
That didn't work.
No, it's just not the same.
All right.
I don't know how to end it without him.
It's weird, isn't it?
It's just a little... There's an empty chair where Tim once sat. You laugh because that's a Star Trek thing. I'm gonna throw this in there. So I'm standing here today.
Oh, that's what I was gonna say. Watch for the Star Trek side.
Oh yeah,
this
watch
week.
For the Star Trek.
Yeah,
the thing that we promised you last
it
week.
It didn't come out last week. We'll get it this week.
Well, yeah, we were slightly busy.
Got a little bit.
So I'm standing here and I'm getting things ready for you to come over tonight. I'm walking around and the line flashes through my head of Shatner going, "Enterprise feels like a house with all the children gone." Because my roommate's gone, my podcaster's gone, he's not here. It's just a little weird. So yeah, TARDIS is empty. I'm sad. When does he get on the boat? Is it too late to stop him?
Tomorrow morning.
Don't go, Keith!
But he's in Louisiana.
He's in New Orleans.
New Orleans.
He's not in Nuwama.
No, he's not.
Yet.
He'll be in Nuwama.
There's time to stop him. Set the spatial coordinates. Let's go.
Run away.
We're really trying to drag something out here that's not happening, is it? Nope. I keep hoping we'll stumble across that perfect. That was the where to end it. And whoosh.
I know how to end it. I know how to end it.
Okay. Ready.
You have been listening to Traveling the Vortex. Doctor Who and all of its associated programs are owned and trademarked by the BBC. No infringement is intended or implied.